This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Happy Monday. Happy Thanksgiving to one and all. And thank you for tuning us in today. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brendan Rewicki kicking off your week. And there is lots to get to. We'll start it with the Winnipeg Jets. It is an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day today. And, of course, the afternoon ride will go from 3 p.m. this afternoon right here on TSN 1290 right up until 6:30. A special 90-minute pregame show has the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Kevin Olszewski and friends from 6:30 till 8. Puck drop right here on TSN 1290 between the Jets and the Edmonton Oilers with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call. And then Olszewski and friends will have the Huron Windows post-game show. The Bombers took one on the chin against the Hamilton Tiger Cats at home. We'll delve into that. There is CFL action today in Edmonton as well as the Eskimos host the Montreal Alouettes. Major League Baseball playoffs, the NFL, a ton of injuries and more surprises around the National Football League. We're going to hear some audio from yesterday's Jets practice in the capital city of Alberta. Dennis Bayak is going to join us, Marshall Ferguson, Jonathan Davis. We're going to qualify two more people for our hockey nights in Vegas and announce our third grand prize winner today during the Royal Sports Power Hour. NHL news and notes and an hour of your phone calls as well. Jim, Troy, and Brennan, as I said, gentlemen, happy Monday. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, back at you.
What are you thankful for today?
I would be thankful. I'd be thankful for some defense in this freaking province if anyone can find it.
Just across the board defense.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't even have that feels good. It doesn't have to be limited to one sport.
The fever for Game 2 is at an all-time high. If Twitter was a boxing match, my kidneys would hurt. I'll put it to you that way.
You're defending what you're seeing?
No, I'm not defending at all what I'm seeing. Why would you say that?
Well, just if your kidneys are hurt, that means people are hitting you.
No, I'm just, I saw Brandon Tanev score a unbelievable highlight reel goal, which I thought would shock many. So I sent out a tweet saying, oh, are any heads exploding? Because, you know, obviously you don't expect that from him. Mm-hmm. And it just was relentless for the next 3 days about how I think Tanev is the greatest player ever to walk the face of the earth and everything else. Of course, on the penalty kill right after that. And then I think heads kept exploding throughout that game. 5 unanswered goals in Calgary after a 3-1 lead. And the Jets are 0-2. Losing 6-3. I mean, your thoughts on the game?
Gravely disappointing. They're a mess. Something's wrong. Yeah, and people, you know, my uncle last night at dinner was saying the whole, it's two games, and he's a Habs fan. Well, this where the Habs are at is kind of something new for the Habs, right? Something is the level of mess here. This is years in process. Focus all offseason. Everyone coming into camp, everyone's heightened awareness, everyone's tuned in, and what you're seeing, man, is there's something wrong. There's some level of disconnect by more than one person, and it's sad to me to listen to Paul Maurice try and explain it. He's in a tough spot, but there's just, it's a mess, and it's heartbreaking to me.
The fever is around Paul Maurice. And a lot of people think that it's his system, it's his this, it's his coaching, and that if he was to go, everything would be fixed. And I want to state this right from the start. He's not blameless. He's the head coach. It's his job to get these guys to play a certain way. I can't imagine how frustrated he is, so I'm not alleviating him from anything. But the bailing on the zone and the mistakes I see are from veteran players. And I just don't know. I agree with you. I think this is a mess. I think it is game two. I'm very interested to see where it can go because it's not over in my mind. However, this is an issue that who do you sort of – I think it's a collective.
Yeah, I mean, if it was solely one thing, it could be fixed pretty early on. But that's the – That's the troubling part. That's the terrifying part. Is it's just everything right now, and it's like nobody's helping anybody out. You have the players playing like crap, and I think you have the coaches not having these guys ready to play either, because they're making mistakes that are so fundamentally basic that it's getting to the point where it's just bewildering to try and explain what's wrong. Like these aren't rocket science issues that's going wrong with this team. It's just the most simplest and basic of hockey principles that this club, as of right now, can't find a way to accomplish. And is it two games into the year? Of course it is. Can they get this turned around by the end of the week? Record-wise, they could get to 500. There's no doubt about that. But I don't need to watch this and wait for 10 games. I don't need to wait for 5 games. This happens tomorrow again. You're just going to status quo and away we go here and we'll just try and figure this out by ourselves. No. You've had more than enough time. And it's what you saw in Calgary Saturday, maybe more so in that second period, is unacceptable at an AHL level. To do that at an NHL level is it's sickening. It makes you want to throw up because the Jets threw up all over themselves. And you had a goalie who gave up 6 goals on the night, and he was your best player on the ice. How the hell does that happen? Well, we've seen it happen here over and over again. And if they can't figure it out by tonight, they got to make changes, and they got to make big ones. Because it's not going to get better internally.
To me, like, you don't... We know that Buff is a wild card, right? And when he's ugly, he really gets ugly. And you look at that picture where he's, you know, pushing up to the blue line twice, gliding in and around. Versteeg is obviously a threat, gliding back, and the goal happens. And that's Buff at his worst. And we've seen that since the arrival here. But when I see so many players making mistakes in at a time frame where obviously senses are heightened and winning is omnipotent, and everybody knows that, and that's what everyone's trying to do here. But it's so disastrous out there, and you know dang well the players are doing everything they can to try and win, right? The players want to win. It seems to me that the players out there look to me like they don't believe in what they're being told to try and do out there. If there's that much disarray this early in the year, something is wrong inherently with the team.
But here's what I see. Obviously, they want to win. So when they go down, or it's tied, or they give up 3 in a row, and they're down 4-3, why don't they stick to the system? Because they don't. They bail the offensive zone like they have the puck when they don't have it.
Well, when you're down 3 goals, why are they doing that?
Yes.
Well, when you're down 3 goals, then
well,
you're
not that when they're
really
down 3
pushing,
goals,
right?
when they're up 3-1, when it's tied or they're down 4-3, or in Toronto they're down 2 or 3-0, they come out in the second period. Like, to me, that's what I see all the time. Is the start of the third period, Enstrom gets caught up with somebody off the faceoff circle. Wheeler comes and just skates by Backstrom, and nobody takes him. And I don't know if you're bailing if you're Blake Wheeler, like you did on the faceoff against Toronto. Bufflin, I agree with you 100%, up at the blue line where he shouldn't be. But then they get the puck, and then Armia tries to make an extra move, but everybody else is on their way out before the puck's out of the end. And Armia makes a one too many moves at the blue line that stays in, but everybody's already on the way out. And to me, whether the system works or not is one question, but they don't seem to stick to the system. Paul Maurice said it. When we're down, we get individual, and we try to... And I don't understand, fine against Toronto, but against Calgary, you just saw this. Like stay in the zone, get the puck, break out. I don't get why it gets so individual from veteran players when you are just tied or down one goal.
Well... And, like, to me, that trying to guess that is more difficult to do, obviously, than looking at the goals and the breakdowns that occur during the goals, right? Like, I don't think, like, the whole individual thing, I don't see that really happening. I understand guys trying to do more and fly in the zone they collectively almost as a group are doing that, but it's this, it's the mistakes leading to the goals that I will that's right before us, and that's real easy to break down and speak of. But I've heard Paul Maurice say this as well, where everyone gets more individual when they get down, but what puts them down in the first place are these outrageous mistakes, for the most part, in their defensive zone. It's an absolute disaster right now, and the whole it's only two games in thing, that's a bunch of horse crap. These are exactly everything that's unfolded the first couple of games, completely embody all the concerns coming in.
Yeah, and I guess they get individual in the sense that they're trying to create offense, and you know, you kind of forget just basic team play, but that doesn't really excuse what's going on inside your own end, where it's not a system thing. They don't have defensive structure. They don't know what the hell they're supposed to do inside their own end. Just when you see the amount of guys that are wide open, and not only wide open, but where are they open?
Is that not a system thing if they don't know what the hell they're doing?
I look at it more as structure, because you should essentially know where you're supposed to be at all times inside your own end. Like to have mass confusion all the time, you kind of rely on, I guess, more so just collapsing towards your own net. And that's not the case, right? It's the constant puck watching. Oh, the puck's over there. Everybody needs to skate over to that side of the ice because we're a bunch of Timbits trying to play defense. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's so basic, the mistakes that they're making, that it really is just kind of confounding to try and explain what is going on inside the players' minds on the ice and inside, like, the coach. You're just at a loss for words right now.
I tell you one thing, in the defensive zone, when you have defensemen roaming around at will, following the puck, that creates absolute chaos to me. If I don't think I've got the guy down low that typically a defenseman's going to have, and he's rolling underneath me, and the left D, if it's Kulikov, but pick your guilty party, when they start rolling around the way they do, that makes defensive zone coverage damn near impossible.
Here's TSN's Craig Button with Glenn Schuler after Saturday's loss in Calgary and what he thinks he's seen from the Jets after two games.
A solid win for the Flames, but a disastrous start here for Steve Mason, who's allowed 11 goals in his first two games with Winnipeg, and for the Jets, really embarrassed in both of their games. What are you seeing from this team defensively right now?
Well, you're not seeing very much good, if any at all. I mean, bottom line is, I use the term positional discipline. They don't have positional discipline. They get out of position, they chase the puck in the wrong areas of the ice, they put pressure on their goaltender, they put pressure on their forwards. You watch this play, and you know, it's working around, it gets there, okay, Perreault, but where's Kulikov going? I mean, that all starts because they broke down long before that. I mean, same thing here. Again, they get beat to the puck, and now the puck gets to work, you know, and all of a sudden you're going to see here almost four Jets that are ready to go on the attack. And sure enough, puck gets turned over. Who comes right to the net? That's Christopher Stieg. They have no chance. Time and time again, there's examples of that. You go back to last year. You go back to 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what. It isn't changing. Until it changes, the results are going to be exactly the same.
That's your point. The Jets 27th last year in terms of goals allowed. Just over three a game. Not even close to an improvement so far this year.
That's Craig Button with Glenn Schuler. We'll talk about that and the whole systems versus whether it's being executed, all that other stuff. When we come back, it is an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets, a game day. Jets and Oilers on TSN 1290 tonight at 8. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers tonight on TSN 1290. Full pre and post. This is The Big Show on a Thanksgiving Monday. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you. We're going to delve into the Bombers in the next segment, talk MLB playoffs and the NFL, and of course we'll get into the audio and much more in the Jets at 7 o'clock too. But right now we'll just get back to those comments by Craig Button. And that's, I guess, the question I have. Like, is it a systems problem, or is it players not executing it? Because I kind of agree with what Craig Button's saying there. Like, you know, it's there, and individual guys are like defensemen. Kulikov, that's two games in a row. He's too high. Bufflin chasing to the blue line. Like, I'm wondering if the frustration is with the system or is the frustration with the lack of buy-in and execution of it.
I think it's both. The Bufflin, the buy-in, and the detail has been a problem at times every single season except for when Paul Maurice first arrived, right? That was the best season by a mile. They're like, we're even his buy-in, like, where's some level of physicality from him? Where's finishing checks? What's he doing out there? How invested is he? So, and the Kulikov thing, like the you know, crossing over your D partner, going to the right side and just completely vacating that zone. And then so there's a couple of guys that are real glaring errors. And to me, even watching the penalty kill, look at how much freaking time other teams have, like standing up on the point, surveying. There's insane amounts of traffic in front of Steve Mason. I couldn't believe some of the takes on Steve Mason's game Saturday night. And even we heard Keller or whoever the guy is there on with Craig Button saying he's having a horrible start. Well, there's a bunch of goals going in, but I thought he played pretty damn good Saturday night. Zero help, and you look at, like, show me the soft goal, right? If the quick pass out from behind the net with Versteeg on the doorstep like that, there just wasn't. It's remarkable, but I think it's a perfect storm of both things going on right now. Where you've got X number of players, depending on the night, that are completely crap in the bed and not paying enough attention to detail. And then I believe very strongly, inherently, that there's something wrong here with the guys in the room and the systems that are trying to be implemented. The power play looks horrible out there and causing all kinds of trouble. And this whole defensive zone scheme, it's been messy for a couple of years now, and it's not getting any better. I don't like it. They put so much onus on the forwards to play defense the way only a defenseman can play at the depth necessary. Like, you just can't rely on your forwards. You need contributions from them, but when you're putting that much, you know, because it's confusing. We don't know, right? I tried to ask Josh Morrissey last week, when are you guys in zone, when are you in man, all the rest of it. It doesn't look like Buff is in man when he's doing what he did. Kulikov isn't in man. He was initially on a different Flames player from when he gets up after falling and starts chasing somebody across the ice. So the in and out of the zone and the man thing would be great to have some detail on that, but they just look like a confused team. So something is not being translated properly, I believe, from the coaching staff to the players. There's something missing there.
And that's where I was going to go with it, like a level of disconnect, where when the players are having trouble explaining it, if you can't explain it, how can you execute it? And you can look at any team, and you look at any other team play inside their own zone, and you can kind of pinpoint what they're trying to accomplish. Can we watch what the Jets do and go, this is what their system is inside their own zone? No, because I don't know. Is it man? Is it zone? Josh Morrissey doesn't know if it's man or it's zone. So,
well, that's maybe not a fair thing to say.
I'm not trying to paint this. You know, Josh Morrissey is explaining this poorly. But the fact remains that watching the Jets play, I don't know what their goal is inside their own end, because it's not collapsing towards the net, and it's not playing super aggressive either. It's some weird hybrid combination thing that nobody seems to get a great grip on. And I don't want to make this about one player too, and because it is, the issues are a lot more than that. But Cassie Campbell, who was the color analyst night,
wasn't she?
She was on fire all night long, and she said it on, you know, maybe specifically that, I guess it was the fifth goal right before the second period ended. But you can't have a guy like Dustin Bufflin playing the way he is and expect this team to go far. There's just to take your cues from your leaders. And to have an effort like that and a complete lack of awareness, he needs to be much better. And he doesn't even need much better. He needs to be completely better. That kind of effort is inexcusable. And I agree where if Dustin Bufflin really truly wanted to, he would be a physical force every single night.
Dude,
that would be terrifying to other teams.
How long has this been said?
Too long.
It's the man. It is what he is, man. It's why a guy with such outrageous skill and talent is drafted 200 and whatever that he was. It's why a team like Chicago didn't think he was worth keeping. the ups and the downs and all the rest of it will – and I when she said what she did there, I hate being this rough on her, but it's the truth. I mean, how anyone listens to this show knows that there was an echo in that broadcast. And to me, so long as he is an alpha dog in that room, that is going to be a part of the DNA in this team.
I tend to lean towards what Craig Button's saying. I think the system's there. I think the players know what they're doing. I don't think they're lost. I just don't think they're buying in and executing it. I think when one player gets off the page, that's when everything breaks down. And whether it's – I mean, we can look at every single goal. And I'll even put Captain Blake Wheeler in there. There are times where they get out of position and it pushes everybody else out of position. And I don't know if it's buy-in or lack of execution or – to me, it's not that they don't know, because that's where I see the errors. They don't stick to it. And I talked about this, and we're going to hear from Paul Maurice at the top of the hour. I talked about this at Toronto. This team comes out, has 6 minutes of power play in the first 15. They have 15 shots on goal. They give up two goals, and it drains them. Their body language slumps. It changes, and the whole game gets away from them that way. And we're going to hear from him because he was asked in Edmonton about whether it's a mental issue or something with this team. But that being said, before we leave this break, gentlemen, we go on and on about what we all individually think and all this. What do you do? If you're the coach, what do you do tonight, Thursday, Saturday? Like, how do you sort of – because I don't – Paul Maurice is not blameless in this, but it's his problem to fix, and I can't imagine how frustrated he is.
I don't know. There were plenty of times in that little section there last year where people were wondering, you know, do you, for instance, dealing with number 33, do you just remove a bunch of his time? Can you bench him? What are the ramifications of that involved? I think his hands are tied. I think he's pretty much screwed as far as, you know, he's going to continue. We'll hear him appeal to the spirit of his team and the individuals who are most responsible for some of the mistakes being made out there. But I'm not sure what he can do. You know, and the scary thing is that it's more than one individual.
We'll delve into this throughout the show today, and of course, open phones at 9 o'clock on the Big Show. We'll talk some Bombers, and let Brandon weigh in on this as well when we come back to the Big Show. TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show on TSN 1290, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets. A game day, Jets and Oilers tonight at 8 p.m. is puck drop right here on TSN 1290. Afternoon ride from 3 till 6:30 with Rick Ralph and Hustler. Kevin Olszewski in the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show at 6:30 till 8, and he'll have the postgame show, the Huron Windows postgame show as well. We'll delve back into the Jets and hear more audio, or some audio, actually. We'll hear what the coach and some of the players had to say after yesterday's practice. We'll do that at the top of the hour in the Royal Sports Power Hour, and we'll also open the phone lines, 9 a.m., an hour of your calls today on the Boss Pizza fan line. And happy Thanksgiving, everybody, on a Thanksgiving Monday. Before we leave the Jets for right now, though, Brandon, as Troy, I'll ask you, what do you do if you're the coach? Like, whether you like Maurice, whether you don't, whether you think he's going to go, he's not going to go right away here. And I don't think he's going anywhere. I think that's why he got an extension. So you sit here, you see these two games. We're going to hear from Maurice. But as a coach, what do you do with the way things sit?
Yeah, I mean, you wonder how safe he is despite that extension. Because if you keep playing like this, you can't. I'm sorry. But we know how pro sports work, right?
Yeah.
You play like this for long enough, you get the axe. And we've seen numerous times before where teams have acted early on in the season. What do you do? It's a $1 million question, and I don't know how you fix it. How do you fix it in one game? How do you go from 7 goals, 6 goals to 3 and under? Against Connor McDavid and company tonight.
Well, that's a question. Like, what do you do tonight? But what do you do in general? Like, it's two questions. It's like you got to do something this evening, but But then it's also like, what do you do for the next eight games?
Well, I mean, penalty kill, we know what should be changed. They should be more aggressive. Defensive zone, we know what should be changed. At the very least, get these guys just collapsing towards their own net and at least protect the house. And if they beat you with point shots and they beat you with outside shots, then I guess you live with that at this point in time. But having said that, I don't expect Paul Maurice to make those changes because he's held firm to what he's believed in for the course of a couple of seasons now. It's been a passive PK and a disastrous unit inside their own zone. So I think you kind of just go back to basics here, but I don't know if we should necessarily expect that tonight.
We'll delve into this and hear from head coach Paul Maurice, Matthew Perreault as well. When things are good or bad, it's always good to hear from Matthew Perreault and his interesting comments. At the top of the hour, we'll get into the Bombers now. Bombers hosting the Hamilton Tiger Cats. We all thought it'd be double digits, and it was. Hamilton took it to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, 30-13. Matt Nichols had to leave the game after taking a horrific hit, stayed in for a while, but then didn't return for the second half. Your thoughts on a 30-13 loss at home for the Bombers to the Hamilton Tiger Cats?
Well, first of all, with Nichols, I really wonder what's wrong because we know he lost his nail and all the rest of it. But going in at halftime, you would think that you could take a needle, pop pills, do whatever to manage the pain, and then you'd go in. He was throwing nice. He was throwing well with that injury, but goes in at half and comes out, and then they decide to go with Dominic Davis. Right, so that's an interesting move, and I wonder if what caused that is because maybe he's hurt much more so than simply the nail, and they didn't want him, like, he could have injured whatever he's got more, or if they wanted x-rays for a possibility of broken bone or bones in the hand, like something along those lines. That is of great concern. And if you get a broken bone in your hand, he could be out for 4 weeks plus, right? Like, it's of great concern. So now, having said that, I thought the play of the game was Dom Davis over Lefevre, really? That's who you think gives you a better chance to win? I know he's second on the depth chart, but I kind of always thought that was just sort of some sort of formality. And to keep him in, to not go with Lefevre at the very least to start the fourth sort of thing, it was just obvious that Dom Davis wasn't going to get anything really going. And what it really drove home for me in watching his, just how benign he was out there, is remember some of the blowout games the Bombers had, and there'd be 5 minutes left, and they couldn't lose 20-point leads or three-score type leads, and Matt Nichols is staying in the game. Well, those are the reasons why you put in your backup quarterback, so you can gain some level of valuable experience in those situations. So that was really disappointing to me. To me, the game was salvageable with Dan Lefevre behind center. It wasn't going to be with Dom Davis. And the defense was freaking horrible. Five plays of 20 or more yards. It gives Mazzoli a career night. The Hamilton Tiger Cats, 483 freaking yards. They couldn't get them off the field at all. They had drives of 14 and 14 and 10. Eight plays long, like they were just munching up the clock. Time of possession, 38-19 to 21-41. It was just a humiliating game at home and a very critical one, right? When you're looking either at, like, the Nichols thing, whatevs, we'll see what happens there. But this is a game that they had to win, and they just totally crapped the bed. And this defense is of concern in a massive way going forward.
Yeah, I didn't mind Dom Davis getting the call over Lefevre, and I mean, his numbers were okay. They weren't going to win the game with him in that sense anyways, and I think it was more to the point I'll get to in a little bit, but that's a very fair criticism of Mike O'Shea, who's done basically everything right this season, but when situations had presented themselves in the past, you're exactly right. That's why you needed to get Dom Davis some time for a guy who's seen. I think he had the one start against Toronto 2 years ago, and that's basically
Calgary, yeah.
That's his only game action he's really seen in the CFL. But the fact of the matter is, the defense was, my lord, just how atrocious you can play against a Hamilton team. That are they improved? Absolutely. They should not go into your barn and stomp all over your defense like that. It was a shameful display. It's it, and it just It really puts a damper, and if anything, it just kind of illustrates how dependent this team is on Matt Nichols in the offense, where they basically need them to drop 28, 30 a night to have a chance here. And it just, the reason I think that loss was so gloomy is that it seems like everything at this point is basically just a lead up to Calgary. Or even if you want to just limit it to the first playoff game at home, a lead up to that, it's almost kind of like just dress rehearsal at this point. And you might be able to get by at Edmonton or Saskatchewan at home in a playoff game with that defense. I don't even want to know what's going to happen if that team goes into Calgary. And you think you're going to give Bo Levi Mitchell an opportunity to feast on that team on the road? We talked about how can the Jets fix their issues going into tonight. The Bombers they can't. They can't fix their defensive issues for the rest of the season. It's something that can only be accomplished going into the offseason, and that's what just kind of puts a bit of a dour outlook on the final couple weeks of the season.
Well, coming into the game, June Jones spoke about the defense and Richie Hall and what a smart coordinator he is and how he's seen it improve up until this point in the season. Like, gave him a lot of credit. And I know coaches are going to say that when they're asked about the opponent they're facing. But you also don't have to go – like, I was a little surprised by how glowing he was about the Bomber defense. But maybe that's because he'd figured some things out. And I also, like – the Darvin Adams was 1-for-1, 100% rating on a 44-yard pass. Of course, I'm being funny here, trying to be with 1-for-1. But and then you look at that punt by Mazzoli that was recovered by Banks. Like,
kick. Yeah.
I mentioned this going into this game, and I'm not pleased at all, as I've voiced, with some of the decisions June Jones has made around his coaching staff in Hamilton. But he's been a real difference to that team and what he's brought in, and not only, you know, putting Mazzoli in and how the offense seems to be coming around and the team itself, but a play like that is just, this is a guy who's like Mike O'Shea, pours over the rules and looks at every situation and comes up with I give him full credit for that punt that Mazzoli had and Banks recovered, and sort of that he's going after wins here with plays like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, give him full credit or give, like, Dennis McPhee, the special teams coordinator, whatever, though. It was great they pulled it off, and it was, you knew that they were in all kinds of trouble, right? Because that's another part of the game. When they lose Castillo, they lose their punter and kicker, they're in all kinds of trouble. You knew that they're going to have to be going for it on third down. So it was a great play to implement. They could pull it off once, and it worked for them, and that was a big play, right? Defense gets them off the field. They extend it with that play. It worked out for them. But that's another sort of unsung aspect of the game that you should be able to come back and take care of business here when they lose their guy, their only kicker. Although the other guy came in to punt, did a good job. But for them to not be able to do anything really from that vantage point, there's another aspect and angle the Bombers should have taken advantage of. It was so disappointing.
So where do they go this week against BC? They host BC on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, so
I guess a lot depends on Nichols' health.
It depends a lot on Nichols' health. And if Nichols is out for any length of time, I'm going to be really surprised. I mean, Dan Lefebvre is a guy that has won games here before. To me, there's a lot of similarities in Matt Nichols and Dan Lefebvre. Dan Lefebvre is actually much more a physical specimen than Matt Nichols is. But their playing style, to me, there are some similarities there. And when they first signed Dan Lefebvre as the backup, I thought it was awesome because in a lot of ways, sort of that cowboy element. Now, Dan Lefebvre was a starting quarterback for a good chunk of time and then got unlucky with some injury troubles. But I thought it was sort of a mirror image of bringing a guy like Matt Nichols in who maybe had some discipline issues in his decision-making. But I thought it was just perfect for Paul Laplace to go land him. I was just shocked when they decided to go with Dom Davis the way they did. Dan Lefebvre, if he's not starting upcoming here, it's going to be something to watch to see what Dominic Davis can do. He just doesn't, you can see that he doesn't read the play at the rate needed, I don't believe, to go out there and be successful. So it's the whole Nichols thing is hugely important, and then not only that, but who they end up starting after that's critical.
I think you should give Dom Davis a game because, I mean, look, this team's invested how many years into Dominic Davis's development?
3, I believe.
3 years. Mm-hmm. And I, for me, I would like to see him, you know, if Nichols is confirmed out for this week, give him a week of preparation, have him as your number one guy throughout the week and get him nice and accustomed to it. And if you want to give him an early hook in the game, then I would be okay with that. But I think you kind of, I feel like you need to see if you got at least a little something there, because Davis at least has the potential to be maybe a diamond in the rough quarterback that you were able to develop. And if you can't get anything from him early on in that game, then yeah, you go with the more veteran guy who's seen some CFL experience and see if you have something there. But again, the fact remains, the defense is going to have to step up. They got to find something here. It's the real frustrating part of it is that the two biggest issues with this defense right now, Sam Hurl and Richie Hull, aren't likely to go anywhere anytime soon. And so I don't know how you can remedy what's wrong with this team outside of the defensive line basically playing out of their minds to kind of close out the season and really just forcing the offensive game plan to go out the window with how much pressure they're able to create, because outside of that, I don't know how they're stopping people.
The lack of impact of Sam Hurl is noticeable. It's just when you get a team that rushes for 146 yards and your middle linebacker makes 4 tackles and he's averaging, I believe, 3.5 tackles a game this year. That is this team, the Bombers, are absolutely desperate to upgrade in that position. And we all know what happened till next year, but I'll be absolutely shocked if they don't upgrade there.
Around the CFL, also this week, Saskatchewan, Brandon Bridge comes off the bench and beats Toronto 27-20 in Toronto. Ottawa sees Trevor Harris come back. They go on the road in BC, win 30-25. Today in Edmonton. In Montreal. In Montreal. I said earlier today was in Edmonton. It's not. Edmonton is in Montreal at 1 o'clock Central Time today. Who do you take in that game? I believe Drew Willey's getting a start, is he not?
Yeah, Montreal is a mess. I think you got to go with Edmonton. But remember here, for the Bombers to secure second, I believe that both Saskatchewan and Edmonton have to win out. The Bombers, if they don't win 2 games, that's the only way they can give it away. So Saskatchewan took care of their business. Expect Edmonton to take care of their business, and it just gets a little bit hotter in the kitchen for the Bombers to make dang sure they get a home playoff game.
Calgary's the only team to clinch a playoff berth, and Winnipeg goes to 10-4. Saskatchewan's 8-6. Edmonton going into today's game is 7-6. BC now 6-8. Toronto 7-8. Ottawa 6-9. Hamilton's 4-10. And Montreal hosting the Eskimos today in the CFL 3-11. We'll take a break here on the Big Show. It's an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Back to the Jets at the top of the hour. But up next, we'll talk some NFL and the Major League Baseball playoffs on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. Back to the Jets at the top of the hour on the Royal Sports Power Hour. We'll talk some NFL and Major League Baseball right now on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers on the station tonight at 8 p.m. Around the NFL, I thought the game of the day, and I thought it would be going in, would be Dallas-Green Bay, gentlemen. Before we hit that, J.J. Watt, gone for the season with a broken leg last night for the Houston Texans, and just tweeted out about 35 minutes ago, "I can't sugarcoat it. I am devastated. All I want to do is be out there in the field for my teammates in this city. I'm sorry." Sorry for getting your leg broke, JJ. Like, this guy, I saw him before the game playing catch with fans in the stands and along the sidelines for an extended period of time, like with a lot of kids throwing the ball 15 rows into the stands, asking for it back. A kid would throw it back to him. He'd do it on the sideline. Everything he did for the city of Houston, like, this, I think, goes beyond his talent on what a loss this is for this team going forward.
It's a big loss for sure, yeah. And it's that game specifically, my goodness, Kansas City's a handful, huh?
Oh, Very good team. Only undefeated team left. Let's get into it. What stood out to you yesterday? To me, the two games that stood out was Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers in Dallas pulling it out against the Cowboys again. And the reverse of that is Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers. I had them as a Super Bowl. I did. I took them as a Super Bowl winning team. I had them getting past the Patriots. And I've seen no signs of that this year. And Ben Roethlisberger, despite the five picks, or including the five picks, I guess, not despite, but before this game, just doesn't look invested this year.
Yeah, it was ugly, huh? Five picks, and then to come out after the game and do the old... I just don't like Ben Roethlisberger as a man, but to come out after the game like that and to say what he says, as you were saying off air, JT was saying, you know, you're team captain and you're going to come out and say that maybe you don't have it anymore, and sort of, it's almost like this, you know, wanting the attention of maybe I'll retire, blah, 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 that sort of thing, almost a more sympathetic type thing, but just unbelievable. And Jacksonville with 18 consecutive rushes to end the game. They had 27 points off the five turnovers. It was as ugly as you get. And the Packers-Cowboys game was spectacular. And the end there, you knew dang well, right? That just a minute 13 left is too much. I heard joking that maybe Dak Prescott should have taken a knee at the one-yard line just to buy a couple more downs before you throw it into the end zone. This, to me, I heard this stat yesterday, and this is the stat of the week. The Green Bay Packers have a point differential of minus one this year in the first three quarters. In the fourth quarter, +112. That seems impossible, doesn't it? But like watching Aaron Rodgers do his thing, I know Tom Brady and the whole debate as to who's the best, and it's impossible to cross-compare eras and all the rest of it, but he is poetry in motion, Aaron Rodgers is, when he's out there watching the ball when he throws it, how tight and beautiful it already always is, and his decision-making. He is just a magician out there.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there's no doubt we're watching the two best quarterbacks that have ever played the game in Brady and Rodgers, and Tom Brady is a specimen of unworldly proportions, but you're watching the quarterback god every time Aaron Rodgers steps to the, like, I just don't know how you can take anybody else other than him. And Troy, you said people were joking that Dak should have taken the knee. That's not a joke. He should have. Mm-hmm. Because that's how ridiculous Aaron Rodgers is. You can't give him the ball with a minute left and a timeout. Just to think as a quarterback, if you're Dak Prescott there, we can't score with a minute left because of who the guy is on the other sidelines. It's just something that shouldn't be a thought in a professional football game, but that's the case. And it's, you look at the supporting cast that he has to, that what Aaron Rodgers has to do when he goes out there, and the fact that they've had, I think, three starting O-linemen out for basically the majority of the season, and they haven't had the same five play a game since the first snap of the year. And what he has to do every single snap, it seems like, it's really a true treasure to watch. And the fact that the Packers get to go from Favre to Rodgers is, I mean, as a Bears fan, that's got to feel real good.
Whatever. Take the titles away. Take the five Super Bowls and the one Aaron has and the MVPs, because they both have several. Who's better?
Well, that's the thing. Just change teams.
Yeah, who's
Tom
better?
Tom Brady could not do what Aaron Rodgers does. Right? I don't know that. Look at the last 5 years. Tom Brady never would have survived those teams that Green Bay had. So, and Aaron Rodgers can stand there and I think probably read and deliver the same types of balls. Tom Brady's brilliance, I'm certainly not going to take anything away from it, but he was also in a perfect situation with the perfect system and coach and everything that came into play to sort of add to his legacy and brilliance and all the rest of it. But to me, like, who's better? If you had to pick one quarterback to come in and go get you a game-winning drive, I don't know how you don't pick a guy like Aaron Rodgers because Tom Brady is in the pocket, and that's it. If it ain't there, he's going down, baby, and Aaron Rodgers can do so much more than that.
I was going to say that third down play kind of encapsulates it, right? Where he gets the ball, and it's immediate. You know, and the way he described it after the game was was just unreal, right? Where he knows that if all he's got to do is get to the outside,
yeah,
and he's able to do it. And he's a surprisingly good athlete that he's able to make plays like that. But that, the reason the title argument doesn't work at all for me is, what if Aaron Rodgers had the Patriots defense?
Yeah. Yeah.
The Packers defense has been god awful since they won the Super Bowl. Yeah. Like, what they like for them to go into Atlanta last year, and Julio Jones, if he really wanted to, could have had 400 receiving yards by the end of the game.
Well, and just the names he makes, like, you know, no, it's not Tom Brady's fault, but you go out and get the Randy Mosses, and you have the Wes Welkers, and then you bring in all these guys over the years. Now Brandon Crooks is there and stuff. Other than Jordy Nelson, who made his name in Green Bay, like, he just slot them in. Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams, these guys come in, and Aaron Rodgers makes them better.
Brady does that as well, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting debate. Baseball today, Astros still lead the Red Sox after a loss yesterday, 2-1. They'll play at noon Central Time. The Nationals and Cubs are tied 1-1. They'll go at 3 p.m. this afternoon. 6 o'clock tonight, Indians and Yankees. Cleveland leads that one 2-1. And then the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks go at 9 tonight, with the Dodgers up 2-0 on the Diamondbacks in Major League Baseball playoffs. Back to the Jets next on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. We'll hear from head coach Paul Maurice on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290 with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki on a Thanksgiving Monday. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Hope you're having a lovely weekend. TSN 1290 and Gypsum Drywall Interiors present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090 with standard message rates may be applying, every time you do. Gypsum Drywall Interiors will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital help caring for kids across Manitoba, kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on caring for kids, simply visit tsn1290.ca. Royal Sports Power Hour, lots to come today. Dennis Bayek's going to join us live from Edmonton on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers tonight at 8 p.m. right here on TSN 1290, full pre and post with Kevin Olszewski, Manitoba Building Trades pregame show 6:30, the Huron Windows postgame show right after, and including the Boss Pizza fan line. And the fan line will be open today at 9 a.m. here on the Big Show. And of course, the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick Ralph starts at 3. They'll go to 6:30 today. We are going to announce our next grand prize winner in Hockey Nights in Vegas coming up in the next segment, and we'll also qualify somebody else for that. NHL news and notes as well, CFL talk, and, of course, your phone calls, as I said. Gentlemen, the Jets held a practice yesterday. There was no Blake Wheeler on the ice, and there was no Dustin Byfuglien on the ice. The presumption is maintenance days for two veteran players. And Paul Maurice spoke after the game, and he was asked if what's going on with his team is more mental than just the X's and O's.
Mistakes are happening. I mean, that's a standard, right? You're always trying to teach and get the reads faster. The faster you make the reads, the faster your team looks. But, yeah, we just got to play a hockey game absolutely as hard as we can. No less for sure, but no more either, right? You're only playing one game at a time. All those old cliches, there's a reason for it. But they're carrying too much. But there's some pieces of our game that are need some intensity improvement. That's a fact as well.
Imagine trying to compel your team for intensity heading into Game 3. Doesn't that speak volumes, guys?
Well, it sounds to me like he's not talking about intensity. He's talking about, like, not...
He said intensity.
I know, but we'll hear some other comments here where he's saying they're maybe pushing or thinking, like, he has a comment we'll hear where he says they're trying to win the Stanley Cup in October. So when things go bad or they give up a goal or two, like, it's just the more they press so hard that they
come on
trying to do things that
I think he's desperately trying to explain. And I feel for him, man. I mean, how can he? He's got to be embarrassed by what they're doing out there. And how do you explain it away, right? Like, there's only so many things he can say. So to say that, you know, they're trying to play for the cup in early October, whatever. Holy cow! I just think he's in real tough here trying to explain what the hell they're doing.
Well, and it's not like he's going to come out and basically berate the team's biggest issue. You know what I mean? Like
how far away is that?
It's not too far away because
it's game two of the season.
Well, no,
that's part of it.
You'll lose the room totally. Yeah. Like that's one of the last signs of getting a new coach.
And you can kind of parse through what Paul Maurice is saying here. And one of my takeaways is that if what he's saying about this club is true, mentally, they are the mentally softest team in the NHL. And I don't know how you change that by the flip of a hat.
No.
If you get so down on yourselves giving up a goal, if you are so incapable of what Craig Button used as the term, positionally disciplined, like I don't know how you come out as the head coach of a team and criticize your players for that, like what Troy said there, basically not causing a mutiny inside that locker room.
Head coach Paul Maurice, after practice yesterday in Edmonton, was also asked, how do you coach a team to be unflappable?
Well, there's a lot of pieces that go to that. Experience is one of them, and experience in the good and the bad, and living through it. So recognize it. You know what? There are momentum shifts in every game. And it's not the change of momentum that gets you in trouble, because it's your reaction to it. It's the mistake that you make after it gets to even. Not really the mistakes that got you to even, where you change your mindset. The other team gets paid too. They have an opportunity to do some things. So simple hockey, right? That's what we're trying to get to. Those are the times where it's just out and in, and the shifts are short and all the checks are finished, and you take that 5 minutes of a moment and you get the game to flat again, and then you just control it like that.
The mistakes after it's tied or they press. Like, it's not beyond for me to say that this team has some mental issues. And I mentioned it after Toronto. I've seen it for at least a couple of years, maybe all six. When they get down, or they have some very good times and don't get results, or they go up and they 3-1 and they get down, it collapses for these guys.
So when they
their
go
body
up, it
language
collapses. When they go down, like, it sounds to me,
well, go up, I mean, against time. Toronto, they take it to them for 15 minutes. They draw three penalties. They outshoot a team heavily, and then they give up two goals, and it just sinks them. So they're not up, but they're playing very well. And then I saw it again in Calgary.
When they're up 3-1.
They're up 3-1. They give up two goals, and it's done.
Yeah, well, then you got then they need an absolute dramatic shift. If that's the case, then you got more or less a bunch of losers or one too many losers in that room, right? If you're going to be affected like that, and like an 8-year-old child would be, you got serious freaking issues, man. And I remember a couple years ago, Brian Little coming out and saying that, you know, they score a goal, everyone puts their head down. It looked like they had battled their way by that. And I'm not buying what you're saying, JT. I don't think it's hard for me or impossible for me to imagine any athlete worth his or her salt at any level whatsoever of that happening. And certainly in a collective mindset of these guys coming in fresh with this new mission this year, and we're 1-2 freaking games into this season, and that's happening, I refuse to believe that. But if it is there, then it's time for profound personnel change. And if you can identify one individual who gets affected like that, then you have to ship his ass out of town yesterday.
Well, I think it's what he's talking about of it's not the mistakes we make to get back to even on Saturday. It's what the mistakes we make after that. And I think that's what he's referencing.
That's
personally
a kooky. That's a goofy thing to say to me. How isn't it? How in the second and third goals allowed aren't those mistakes? What do you mean? It's not the mistakes there.
When they gave up the lead, it went off the rails. When they didn't get a goal and gave up two against Toronto, it went off the rails. That's what I mean. That's what I think he's referencing.
Well, and
that's what he literally said.
Well, and you know, you mentioned the Leafs. And look at what they did Saturday night. You know, they blow a 5-1 lead. And at that point, they have every right to just kind of look at themselves, go into the third period, 20 minutes, and say, we blew this one, move on to the next game. But they came
prime
back,
example.
And they were able to kind of battle through that. We don't see that with the Jets. And it's the problems with this team are so simple and basic. That's really, to me, the most frightening thing of all of this. It's just kind of your simple hockey. I don't even know if it's just hockey. It's just simple professional sports tenets that they are unable to accomplish night in and night out. And I'm not buying the it's this early into the season argument anymore. I don't need to see many more games like we saw to start the season. One or two more of these, and it's like Troy said, and I think like basically everybody who calls in is going to say, that's enough. It's enough. It's got to be changes, and it's got to be multiple changes, and they got to be major ones too. Because what we're seeing right now, this team is way too talented for them to have performances like the last two games on consistent bases. And it's enough at this point. Just find a way to change it.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290, the Royal Sports Power Hour. Here's head coach Paul Maurice. After practice yesterday in Edmonton, when he was asked if his club possibly is trying too hard.
What you find with that is that's a tougher thing sometimes for those guys. It's harder for the veterans, to be honest, than it is for the kids, because they feel responsible, right? They as much as anything, they want to win the game too, and they have a tendency to take too much on. I it's a bigger challenge. It's not the kids in this, and I'm not placing blame on it. On our veterans, but it's a bigger challenge for them because they feel it. It's a good bunch of guys, right? They're trying to make the playoffs in October. It's like we're playing the deciding game every night, and when it got away from us, we're carrying too much weight. We got to play harder, compete harder, but we got to do it through relaxing and playing the game, and occasionally breathing. Right? You gotta take one in every once in a while and hit the reset button and go out and play.
And I tell you, like, they've got to do something about their penalty kill. Just watching all the goals on basically on loop here, and they are just letting other teams set up at the point, and there's so much traffic in front of Mason, he doesn't have a freaking chance. If the puck happens to hit him, I know Paul Laplace before the first game said, hey, we're going to jump on the rebounds and get it out. That was sort of seeming to me that their scheme or what one of the plans was for their penalty kill. But they are giving all day up at the point, super tight. The amount of traffic in front of Mason is beyond unacceptable. And if that doesn't change, they're just screwed. That everything happening in front of Mason right now is just mind-blowingly hideous.
We'll take a break and get more into the Jets and, of course, open the phone lines at 9 o'clock. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, taking your calls on a Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Up next, we announce our next grand prize winner in Hockey Nights in Vegas on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
We will qualify our next person, but first we're going to call our next grand prize winner. TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights on Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. Are we dialing that phone, sir? Are we going to get this grand prize winner? Are you up on a Thanksgiving Monday? Are you excited? Are you waiting with bated breath?
Why do we eat turkey so seldom? We all love it so much. Why do we just...
I eat turkey every day, but it's the processed sandwich one.
Slices. Which is nowhere near as good.
No, not the original, yeah. Did you have turkey yesterday?
Hell yeah.
All right.
Hello? Stricken.
Hi, is this Sharon?
Yes, it is.
Sharon, this is Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki from The Big Show on TSN 1290. How are you this morning?
I'm really good.
Happy Thanksgiving. Yourself? Good, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, and thanks. Same to you.
We were just discussing how Troy Westwood ate some turkey yesterday. Did you?
Actually, no, I'm going to have some today.
Oh, good for you. Do you have a big dinner planned?
Yeah, what time should we be there?
Just a couple of us. That's about it. Something small.
So there's room for us.
Oh, absolutely.
Outstanding.
Nice.
Sharon, we're calling you because TSN 1290 is pumped to announce you are our third winner for Hockey Nights in Vegas.
Oh,
you are off to Vegas in November with a guest to take in the Winnipeg Jets and the Las Vegas Golden Knights.
My husband is going to be so thrilled.
That's outstanding.
Yeah, I am. That is great.
We're sending you and your husband, if that's who you choose to take, to Vegas November 9th to the 13th, where you'll watch Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We're going to give you two hockey tickets, free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport from Park and Ride, which is very, very important to Winnipeggers. And with return airfare to and from Las Vegas, four nights accommodations at the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino, provided by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals. And, Sharon, and you'll be able to buy a bigger turkey if you want to, because we'll also throw in $1,290 cash for any extras you may want. Congratulations, Sharon.
Oh, thank you so much. You just made my day.
Awesome.
You made my year. This is so, so wonderful.
Outstanding. Well, we hope we made your day. We're glad we did. We thank you for listening to TSN 1290. So your husband is the lucky guest?
Oh, absolutely.
Have you two been to Vegas before?
Yeah, he's been there a few times. I was only there once.
Okay.
Yeah, well, but it was great. It was great.
Well, you're going again.
Oh, thank you so much. You have a wonderful day.
You as well, Sharon. We'll be in touch with you. Congratulations. Enjoy Thanksgiving. And don't worry about getting a bigger turkey. We're all busy today.
Thank you so, so much.
Have fun, Sharon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Sharon Zisk is our latest grand prize winner, and we'll be off to Vegas, as we mentioned, as RedTag.ca and TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas. I'd like to be there when she tells her husband, hey, by the way, you might want to do dishes after dinner
today. That joy, just all that joy as you're describing what she's getting, that's beautiful.
Outstanding. Good for them, and we hope you have an outstanding trip as well. Now, there are still two more trips to win. Listen for your chance to qualify. Weekdays at 7:15 and 8:15 right here on The Big Show. 12:15 and 5:15, or 12:15 on the Don Vito Roundtable, and then 5:15 on the Afternoon Ride. Or watch for bonus chances to qualify on TSN 1290's Facebook page. Next winner will be announced Monday, October the 23rd, right here on The Big Show. Hockey Nights in Vegas. Go all in with us here at TSN 1290. And for more info, visit TSN1290.ca or redtag.ca as well. Now, we need a qualifier, do we not?
TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas. Be the 12th caller right now at 780-1290 to instantly score a Jets Gear gift card and qualify for your chance to win one of five trips to Las Vegas to see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Knights and so much more. Compliments of RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals.
12th caller through at 780-1290. You'll be our latest qualifier, and we'll see if you're our next grand prize winner, like Sharon and her husband, who are off to Vegas to see the Vegas Golden Knights and the Winnipeg Jets November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. 780-1290, the 12th caller through for that. The Vegas Golden Knights are 2-0.
Indeed.
They beat Dallas in an interesting way.
It's a thriller.
They were down 1-0 until Ben Bishop took one off the melon, split his lid, had to leave the game. Lettinen came in, gave up two quick ones. James Neal gets the win.
That one goal, Lettinen looked pretty funny when Neal kind of fell down and was shooting from the knee, and Lettinen was just trying to maintain some level of composure as a goalie trying to get out and up more. It was pretty funny, but what a great win it was.
And you know what? What a great start for them. And listening to the post-game audio from Fleury and James Neal and everybody else, just dedicating the whole first game to the city of Vegas and everything they've been through. And it's just a real good story in sports. I'm indifferent if Vegas wins or loses, but to watch them in the fashion they pulled that out and then just sort of do that for the city of Las Vegas, it was interesting. The Las Vegas Golden Knights are 2-0. We're going to get into some of the teams who are 2-0 and some of the teams who are 0-2 when we hit the NHL news notes later in this hour. Dennis Bayek's going to join us at the bottom of this hour. And meantime, we are going to qualify another person for our Hockey Nights in Vegas, and then we'll do it again at 8:15 right here on the Big Show. And then, of course, Kevin Olszewski will be in with the Don Vito Roundtable. He'll have a qualification at 12:15, as will Hustler and Rick Ralph on the afternoon ride at 5:15 p.m. today. And stay tuned and go to our TSN 1290 Facebook page, because we'll be doing some social media and online qualifiers throughout the week as well. So we postponed it for a little bit out of respect for the tragedy that happened in Las Vegas. But it's back on now, and we're taking qualifiers. We had a few people tweet me over the weekend and last week and saying, very nice of us to postpone it. Hey, it's the least we could do for what took place down in Las Vegas. But now we're back. We're moving forward. And we're going to continue to qualify people. So make sure you stay tuned to both TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca for more chances to qualify on the Big Show. As we are waiting for our next qualifier, I'll let you know about another great way to get in on some winning here at TSN 1290. You wanted it back, we caved. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with some host of cool add-ons. This time there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. Mam Cave includes a 500 men's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports. Pizza night for 10, courtesy of Boston Pizza. Two tickets to an upcoming UFC fight night, December 16th at Bell MTS Place. A Winnipeg Jets guys night out, including two tickets to an upcoming home game this season for the Jets in the 2017-18 season at Bell MTS Place, and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey, puck party, and a rink water, nice rink, rink in a box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. The Mam Cave has a $500 women's Burton Gear shopping spree, the pizza party from Boston Pizza, two tickets to Shania Twain's Now Tour May 13th at Bell MTS Place, a Winnipeg Jets girls night out, and two tickets to an upcoming home game for the Jets, and a customized Jets hockey jersey, and another rink water, nice rink, rink in a box. Select your cave of choice online at TSN 1290. We'll randomly draw a winner of each prize package on Monday, October the 30th. TSN1290.ca is where you do that. Now, back to Hockey Nights in Vegas. Who's our latest qualifier?
Ernie had to run, but we'll give a congrats out to Ernie Mischowski from Saskatoon.
Wow! Ernie! Up in our sister province. Is that our sister or our distant cousin province, or what is that?
Be our sister province, I believe.
Oh, all right. Congratulations, Ernie. Thanks for listening all the way out in Saskatoon. You're our latest qualifier. Just for doing so, you get a Jets Gear gift card. Saskatoon, that's awesome. Thanks for getting up on a Thanksgiving Monday and tuning us in here at TSN 1290. Once again, Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and us here at TSN 1290. Ernie Mazowski. Did I say that right?
Mischowski.
Mischowski.
Chaucer.
Ernie Mischowski is our latest qualifier. We're going to do it again at 8:15 on the Big Show. Kevin Olszewski's Don Vito Roundtable at 12:15. And, of course, Hustler and Rick Ralph at 5:15 on the afternoon ride. The afternoon ride today, 3 till 6:30 on Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. That's because the puck drops between the Jets and the Oilers at 8 right here on TSN 1290. And at 6:30, Kevin Olszewski and friends will have the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show. And then he'll have the Huron Windows postgame show right after. And the face of the Jets on TSN 3 and one of the main voices here on TSN 1290, you heard him on Saturday calling the Flames game. Mr. Dennis Bayak joins us next from Edmonton on the Big Show and the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290. Congratulations, Sharon!
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a part of the iHeartRadio Network. Download the iHeartRadio app and listen to us on all your favorite devices, or go to the Perfect Four section and choose from hundreds of channels to suit any mood or music taste. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and get streaming. The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki, and the Royal Sports Power Hour on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers tonight, live at 8 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Full pre- and post-game coverage as well on the station. Your NHL news and notes are going to come, but this segment is brought to you by Olympic Homes, and it is with the face of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 3 and one of the main voices here on TSN 1290, Mr. Dennis Bayak, live from Edmonton. We'll get to him just momentarily, but Connor Hellebuck getting the start tonight.
Yeah, good luck, kid, against the Edmonton Oilers. Almost, I can't help but wonder if it's a bit of a mercy call for Steve Mason. Like, just take a breather here and let us try and survive this. We'll get right back to you.
We welcome in now the face of the Jets on TSN 3 and one of the main voices here on TSN 1290 live from Edmonton, Mr. Dennis Bayak. Good morning, Dennis.
Live might be a stretch, but yeah, good morning.
Are you in a turkey coma at all? Or
yeah, no, not at all. All good. Quiet night.
Excellent. We'll just start with your thoughts on the Calgary Flames game, 6-3 loss for the Jets after being up 3-1.
Well, again, something that we saw in the first game against Toronto. You know, got off to a good start and put some pucks past Mike Smith and got that lead. And then when that second goal came to make it 3-2, everything just kind of seems to unravel after that. And, you know, that's the part that I think is concerning to the coach and the players, because they know that there are going to be stretches in a game where things don't go your way, and you have to be able to handle those. And we saw it in the Toronto game where they were playing very well, and all of a sudden, in 2 minutes and 38 seconds, they're down 3-0. And then we saw it again in the Calgary game where they're up 3-1. And then not only did Calgary make it 3-2, they pumped in three more, and the game was basically done. So, you know, it's that next shift. And I know it's human tendency to try and get it back. I mean, we all do it on a golf course. We hit a bad drive, and instead of just saying, okay, I'm behind a tree, I'm just going to punch to the fairway. No, you say, no, you know, I can hit a three-wood here. I can fade it around the tree, over a bunker, get it on the green, and maybe get a par out of this. So, and that's kind of what they're facing right now, is they want to get that goal back right now. And then they start running around, and a lot of the issues are being caused with that first mistake. And that's the area that has to get cleaned up. And then chaos starts in your own zone. And, you know, Calgary Flames put pucks and people to the net and got the Jets running around, and the game ended up where it did.
Dennis, I like the distinction you make on the everything starting with the first mistake, because watching some of the remarkable breakdown in the defensive zone, if you just looked at the end product or the final couple seconds of the play, you might see a forward near the guy that's open. But the number of changes and the swirling around of some of the players chasing the puck makes it impossible to read as a forward as to who exactly you got, because you got one guy will change from one player to the next. It is absolute chaos in the defensive zone at times.
It is, and that's where you can't just overlook anything. It is that first mistake that is causing a lot of the issues. And what's probably disconcerting inside the coach's room is, they spent a lot of time through training camp working on that very thing, working on staying and staying in your position, doing your job. Matthew Perreault maybe said it best yesterday. He said, work hard at doing your job. And but then the next step on that is to try and eliminate that first mistake, that first read that's wrong. And I think some of this is still coming from guys trying to do too much. We're seeing some individualism out there. And once they start trusting each other a little bit more and just let the game come to you, and it's hard to do sometimes because, you know, you're dealing with players on the other team that are very good. You're going to see that again tonight. But sometimes just let the game come to you. Take what's given to you. Don't try and force something. And I think they're all, you know, there was such optimism going in, and now there's so much pessimism, and that's going to be the difficult part. Keep that all that negative stuff out of the room and just play this game that's given to you tonight and kind of go from there.
I know the fever around Paul Maurice with some fans, and I understand that, but to me, I can't imagine how frustrating him and the coaching staff must be with some of the mistakes they see out there.
Well, because they've worked on this. They've worked on this for weeks, and during the preseason, they saw it work. They saw where what they were trying to implement was working. And yes, it was preseason, and we've seen it at times during the course of the game. And believe me, you know, I know fans are frustrated, and they have the right to be, because it's not what we expected. So, but that starts inside the coach's room, because they got thrown a curveball here, because they had seen some progress in the preseason. They saw the practices where, you know, they were trying to be a more patient team. They were trying to be better defensively, and there were signs that it was working, and then all of a sudden, in 2 minutes and 38 seconds against Toronto, it kind of all goes out the window, and now you got to try and build that up, and it didn't what you had built didn't come down one brick at a time. It kind of came crumbling down in 2 minutes and 38 seconds, and now you're building again from scratch. And you know, they had practiced yesterday. There was a couple guys missing, so they could only work on certain things. But it's a matter of getting into the game, and they were up 3-1 in Calgary. It's a matter of now taking that into the second period. Even if the second period in Calgary ends 3-3, hey, you're tied after 40 minutes on the road. Take it from there and go. But it's just that it's that urgency that they seem to have to try and you know, try and convince themselves that they were right into believing that, that they're going to be able to score goals and be able to outscore teams. And they all say it. They know it. They know it, that you need to be a better defensive team if you're going to have success in the National Hockey League. So now it's a matter of going into this game tonight and practice what you preach.
Dennis, last night saw two goals disallowed in the Habs game. They score twice. They're both disallowed. The second one, Ryan McDonagh looks like he's pushing the Hab into Lundqvist, but they still disallow it. I'm watching the second goal, Sam Bennett, there is no doubt whatsoever. His right skate is in the blue paint and behind the skate of Steve Mason, and Mason's unable to kick out and go after the puck. Did the Jets make a mistake in not reviewing or challenging that second goal?
The feeling was, and this came from the coaches, the feeling was that Mason had initiated the contact. Mason came out, and if you watch, and I didn't get a real good look at it, his blocker apparently comes out and makes contact with Sam Bennett to start the entire process. So, and I think that's what they felt, that you know, that the referees might look at it that way, and there might not be enough to overturn it. I think the other side of it was that, you know what, it's still 3-2. Do you want to use your time out there in case you're not successful, you know, in that situation? But I know we had Jamie Compon on the broadcast after the second period, and that was his feeling. His feeling was when they looked at it on the monitor that they have on the bench, they felt that it was Mason that initiated the contact, and they didn't feel there was enough there for the referees to overturn the call. So, you know, I think if it would have maybe tied the game 3-3, then maybe use it for the other side of it too. You're going to slow the game down a little bit. But I think they felt at that time they were still playing very well. It was 3-1. One time in the second period, I think the shots were 3-1 or 7-1 in favor of the Winnipeg Jets. So things were going along well, and that's back to just what we talked about a couple of minutes ago. It just seemed that one goal, you know, and then in the next couple of shifts there's a penalty, then there's a power play goal, and then it just all starts to unravel for them.
Dennis Bayak joining us here on the Big Show this morning, 40 minutes past the hour on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290. Dennis, Connor Hellebuck gets a start tonight. That's not a shock to me. He was going to get a game eventually, but is it because Mason's been so busy the first two games that it's the third game of the year, or was that the plan?
I think part, a little bit of both. I mean, I'm with you. When I looked at the schedule and you know, we talked to Paul Maurice about the goaltending, and he said he really hadn't gotten that far down the line yet. And then you had the back-to-back games, but I'm with you. I kind of looked at the schedule and thought, okay, this might be a night where Connor Hellebuck does get the start, because the schedule is not busy for them. Not like there's a bunch of back-to-backs coming up or whatever, and you have to get Hellebuck into a game. I think you owe him that. He played 56 games last year, won 26, so he needs to get in. And tonight's the night where he's going to go against an Edmonton team that you talk about managing expectations, and I think that's part of it with the Jets right now as well, is managing some of the expectations that are out there. And there's nothing wrong with those expectations. They have to be there, but manage them. And I think, you know, it's funny how things go here. Edmonton beats Calgary 3-0, and they're going to win the Stanley Cup, and they go into Vancouver and start very slowly, and everybody's all up in a panic here and saying that's not what good teams do. And Connor McDavid didn't have a point in the second game. He was supposed to get 100 goals, and that's the way it is. That's the fever that drives this great game of ours. But so Hellebuck will be busy tonight. Edmonton's a little bit hungry, and the Jets are hungry, so it should make for a good tilt.
The Leafs, 15 goals in two games. Like you said, Ovechkin, 7 goals in two games. Your thoughts on some of the wild offense we're seeing?
Wow, it really is. I think it was Gordon Miller texted the other night or tweeted jokingly saying we need to make the net smaller. So it has been wild. I mean, it's the way the game is going. You could really see it coming the last few years, I think, you know, where the game has just gotten so fast. The rules now where you the rules just continuously favor the offensive side of the game, and that's part of what some teams and some players are struggling with, and especially the veteran players. I think it's a struggle for them right now because, you know, they've played this game. They've been in the National Hockey League for 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and the game is changing for them, and it's changing rapidly. So, but it's exciting. You know what? If fans want goals, and not just goals. I mean, we have seen some absolute beauties, from a lot of players. And, we've seen challenges. We've seen ones where you say, how was that not overturned? And so on and so on. But it certainly made for an exciting start to the NHL season.
You talk about expectations in this city, and rightfully so. Higher expectations in Edmonton. What's the fever around the team as they sit 1-1 going into tonight's game?
Well, it was interesting as we were on our way to practice yesterday, walking to the practice rink that's attached to the new building. There was some minor hockey games ending, so there was parents around and they see you're standing around, so they kind of put two and two together. You're waiting for the Jets to come out, and it's just interesting listening to some of the fans. I mean, this team after the Calgary game, that was it. They were going to go 82-0, and Connor McDavid was going to have 500 points, and all of a sudden, one game later, they were down on Talbot. They should start Beausoleil. And Connor McDavid needs to be better, and you're just kind of saying, people, like, it's game two of the season. But the expectations here are very high, and that was a topic in the preseason when the Jets played the Oilers around the Edmonton people, and the coaches included. How is this team going to manage the expectations? Because as much as we talk about the expectations in Winnipeg, you're right, they are higher here, and learning to manage that is way more of a challenge than I think we think. Inside that room, there's pressure with the questions every day, and they read hockey news, they read papers, they listen to talk shows, they know what the expectations are, and that's a lot of pressure to put on young players.
Dennis, when I watch Nikolaj Ehlers out on the ice, and right now he's out there with that second team power play, the number of controlled zone entries he has, he is without doubt the best Jet at that. Do you think the Jets are doing themselves a disservice, or do you understand why, because it confuses me, why he wouldn't be on the top power play for the Jets?
Well, I think because it's set up the way it is. They on that number one power play, they want Line A, to be the trigger man, or Scheifele in the high slot. That's the way it's set up, with Wheeler on that far side, and they still believe that Blake Wheeler can score. If they start to cheat to Scheifele and Line A, or Byfuglien at the point, that Wheeler can score from that right circle, and I think he can too. On that second power play, I think they would like to see Nikolaj Ehlers start shooting the puck a little bit more. You're right, his zone entries. I mean, they did some work on the penalty kill at practice yesterday because Byfuglien and Wheeler weren't there, so they really couldn't do a lot of work on the power play. But Ehlers did it again in practice. He did it in practice on Friday in Winnipeg before they went. But that speed coming in, teams around the National Hockey League, as you watch games, they're more and more lining up across the blue line, kind of forcing you to dump it in, especially the teams that have a goaltender that can handle the puck very well. So that zone entry with the speed that he brings certainly has been effective. It's created opportunities. And that second power play unit with Perreault and Little, I think, can be as effective as that first one because it gives you a different look. And for Nikolaj Ehlers, again, it's a start just put pucks on net and try and find the net instead of sometimes he's looking to pass off and give somebody else the opportunity. And I think they're both power play units, even though they have looked good and they've created some great chances. There has been some times, be a little more selfish. If you got a chance to shoot the puck, wire it and see what happens after that.
It's been a long time since he's seen a fever for a player who hasn't played yet, but Jaromír Jágr fever on Saturday and throughout the city of Calgary must have gone crazy. Have you ever seen anything like that for a guy who has yet to don the jersey?
It was wild, and you know what? Good for him. He's enjoyed every minute of it. He's been available to the media. He's been willing to talk. And if you can get Jaromír Jágr talking, and this is where it kind of go back to the New Jersey days. He was just kind of starting to really open up, And then he went to New Jersey where, you know, Lou Lamoriello was there, and they've got different rules and regulations as to how you, how much time you spend with media, et cetera, et cetera. But, he really seems to be enjoying Calgary. Bit surprised that he didn't get in the lineup on Saturday, and it was his call from what Glenn Gullifson says, but, there certainly is a lot of excitement, you know, and then the interesting part, let's go back to the rivalry between Calgary and Edmonton. It's not just on the ice. I mean, the Edmonton people here just don't understand what Calgary's even doing. Why would they sign a guy that's that old, can't skate anymore? The Flames are going backwards and all that that comes with it. But certainly the traveling Yagers, were having a fun afternoon. They were, at the bar at our hotel before we headed to the game, and they were getting lubricated for Saturday night, and they had a blast with it, and Yager had a blast with it, and presented them with a Calgary Flames 68 jersey. I think he's looking forward to playing in Canada, and I think he's going to really embrace it and have fun with it.
Dennis, we appreciate it as always. Thanks for this. Should be a good one tonight and interesting, to say the least. Enjoy the game.
Yeah, it'll be a good challenge. I mean, coming here is never easy, especially after they're coming off a loss in Vancouver, too. Their coach was a little grumpy, so we'll have a couple of grumpy coaches going into this game tonight, a bunch of grumpy players, and you're right, it should make for a good game.
Thanks so much, Dennis.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Yeah, thanks, same to you and the crew out there. This segment was a presentation of Olympic Homes, ready-to-move specialists. Tour their homes in person or online at olympichomes.ca. NHL news and notes next on The Big Show and the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and not AutoCorp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field and our not AutoCorp VIP Blue Bus will pick you up and drop you off at the not AutoCorp VIP tent to tailgate before the game. Then after all the football action, take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes 6 tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter now at TSN1290.ca. Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki, NHL news and notes time here on the program. And before we leave the whole Yager thing, he practices with the Flames. And after they go, how'd that feel out there? And he goes, not good. And they're like, what?
Yeah, and I don't think he's joking.
The media's like, what? He goes, well, I've just been practicing on my own. That's my first actual practice with the team. It's not good. I don't feel great. It's going to take a time. I'm old.
Strangely honest, right?
Like, super honest.
Even when he's already signed the contract saying, I'm not ready to play and all, like, all this sort of stuff. Why aren't you ready to play, dude? What do you mean? Weren't you?
Well, he missed all of training camp. He's been skating on his own.
Well, yeah, but weren't you working out? And even he was saying, I wasn't working out too much. Like, weren't you hopeful to get into the league? Shouldn't you be in tip-top shape, ready to go? It just
He's in shape, I think. He was just referencing the fact that skating on your own and staying in shape is not the same as practicing with the team and going through. And they said, like, I think they were asking him, how does it feel, you know, as in how does it feel to be back on a team and practicing? And he was just like, not good. I don't feel great. That was a hard, like, my body is not the same as a normal practice. I need some time to get acclimatized. I just love the honesty.
It's a cute gong show, but I wonder in the end if it's going to be a mistake.
I'm not buying it. Probably had a 45-pound weighted vest underneath his jersey. And, you know, after everybody skidded off at the end of practice, he went back on for another 30-minute bag skate by himself.
So speaking of that, what do you guys expect from this? What do you think the impact will be? It looks like he'll be on the third line with Versteeg and Bennett. What do you expect from him? As we all said, he's slowing down a bit and he's, you know, 40 points or 40-plus points. And so basically a point every 2 games on average. What do you expect from Jaromir Jagr at this age and this stage with the Calgary Flames?
I don't know. I don't have any expectations of him. And I really wonder, looking forward to what, once they get the puck into the zone and they get it down low, he'll be great. But him keeping up and down the ice is going to be of intrigue to me. You know, like, it's not the slow, gradual, getting older, lose a half a step, lose another half a step. Doesn't always do that. Every once in a while, you see it just drop off a cliff sort of thing. And I just kind of wonder if he's not ready and if he has let himself go to any degree whatsoever and just flat out being 45 years old in today's game when it's the very fastest it's ever been. I wonder. I wonder if they're going to look back at, and all the gong show involved here. I just wonder if it's the best thing for the Calgary Flames.
I think he'll be fine. And I think as long as he's willing to accept a lesser role and realizes that, A, it's best for him, and it's best for the team, then I think everything will be just fine. It's not going to be him on the Panthers last year. First-line minutes, first-line power play, that sort of thing. He's kind of just a supporting role at this point. Then if you want to put him on the first power play unit, that's fine too, because that's where he's going to clearly excel at this point in his career. But to have a guy like that on your third line, I don't see how that can be anything but a net positive for the Flames.
Let's go around the league now, gentlemen, in the NHL news and notes. Looking at the standings, and we'll start out east. Toronto's 2-0, Washington's 2-0, Detroit is 2-0. Flyers 2-1, Pittsburgh 1-1, and then it goes down from there. Buffalo 0-1-1, Montreal 1-2, Rangers 1-2, Ottawa 0-2. What surprises you or doesn't surprise you out of those? I know it's early, but...
Well, the 15 goals Toronto scored is crazy, and just to the degree that it's... John Kendall here in Winnipeg said, oh, great, up to this point in time, Leafs fans have been intolerable, now they'll become insufferable, or something like that, right? Just that whole thing and the disdain so many have for the Leafs, it's going to be fun to watch that. But boy, my goodness, they just look pretty darn good. And it's still concerning in Montreal, four goals for, 10 against. Nothing's really been solved there, and they're pumping the brakes, trying to get everyone to hang on, my uncle included in this, with the it's still early sort of thing. But at what, you want to wait 20 games till early is early? Till early is not early anymore? I don't know, man. It's a pretty wild stuff, and you have to wonder. He's already scored 16% of what Sid won the Rocket Richard with last year at 44 goals. What Ovechkin's done in the two games, you have to wonder what number he's going to put up this year.
Well, he's on pace for an Ovech trick. Like, that's the next step for him to take, is to actually get one of those. But it's, that's probably been the one part that was underreported or not looked at hard enough going into this season. If I'm a Cavs fan, I don't know if I'm happy or a bit angry about this, but... I think the word was Ovechkin lost something like 10 or 15 pounds over the offseason.
Like a lot of veterans did to try and get faster.
Yeah. Right? Jonathan Taves did the same.
Yeah, and so I wonder if conditioning was a concern at points in previous seasons.
I don't think it was conditioning, brother. It's just he was ripped and lean, right?
Fair enough. I said I don't know what it is, but if that's the case, that would be unfortunate. But if he's...
Who was ripped and lean, Ovechkin?
Oh, yeah.
He was not ripped and lean.
Well, I saw an interview with him wearing a tight Under Armour jersey, and there wasn't fat on him, I'll tell you that much.
Did you see his wedding video from the start of the summer?
No. I'm talking last year, not over whatever he did in the summer. But they're saying that he lost whatever weight in the summer. I saw an interview with him last year, mid-season, and the dude was ripped and lean, and 240.
It's kind of funny how big Russians are, isn't it? Like, Kovalchuk, when he played, was like 235. Get your eyebrows down. Yeah, get your eyebrows down over there. But it's funny, too, how McDavid pots three on opening night, and we got our first 82-goal player since, Brett Hall and Gretzky back in the 90s and 80s. And then what does Ovi do? Back-to-back Hatties. In like two and a half periods of work.
Yeah. Well, we took tweets on that. Somebody said, McGuire said, what about McDavid could score a goal a game, 82? And they're like, what about Ovechkin? He's got... 7. I want to go out west before we leave this. Chicago's 2-0. Los Angeles is 2-0. St. Louis is 2-0. Vegas is 2-0. Your 0-2 teams, as well as the Jets, are San Jose, Nashville, and Dallas.
Yeah, I'm not watching Dallas's games or Nashville. Nothing as I am with the Jets, right? We study them inside and out. So these other teams are not real sure exactly where they're at. This is what I know with the Jets. They're defensively, they're in an absolute... gong show, and special teams-wise, power plays 25th, and penalty kill is 30th.
Boss Pizza Fan Line open at 9 o'clock for your calls on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. They're in Edmonton to take on the Oilers at 8 p.m. tonight on the station. We'll talk some CFL next with Marshall Ferguson on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Happy Thanksgiving on the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. And every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on the Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on the Big Show on a Thanksgiving Monday. Happy Thanksgiving once again to everybody. It's also an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers on the station tonight at 8. Full pre- and post-game coverage as well. And the Boss Pizza Fan Line on the post-game show. The Boss Pizza Fan Line on the Big Show at 9 a.m. We'll be taking your calls on the Bombers, losing to the Tiger Cats, the Jets and Flames, Jets and Oilers, NFL, and Major League Baseball postseason underway as well. Jonathan Davis will join us at the bottom of the hour to talk some more hockey from WestCoastHockey.com, and we'll qualify another winner in our Hockey Nights in Vegas contest. And we want to congratulate our third grand prize winner, Sharon Zisk, is off to Vegas with her husband to take in the Las Vegas Golden Knights and the Jets and a whole bunch of other great stuff on November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. So thanks for listening, Sharon, and congratulations. We have two more grand prizes to give away, and we'll qualify somebody in our next segment.
We're just having some phone issues right now, but hopefully get a hold of Marshall.
Oh, okay.
Fairly soon.
Some technical difficulties.
Marshall Ferguson, very interested to hear what he has to say, as he is the play-by-play man of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, talking CFL with us as well. There's also CFL today. What a great sports day on a Thanksgiving day. We have Major League Baseball playoffs. We have a Monday Night Football game featuring the future best quarterback in the free world and some of the captive world in Mitchell Trubisky.
Don't you feel bad for the guy? Baptism by Monday night and against the Vikings D? I mean, are you
kidding
me? I
don't feel bad
me?
For anybody.
Really? This is, they're going to throw him to the wolves like
you know
this.
What? This is why I feel bad. I mentioned this last week. Like, we see Deshaun Watson in Houston, and we see how good he's doing, and some of the other, Jared Goff after a season. And, Carson Wentz came in and did good things his first season right out of the gate, game one. The reason I feel bad for him is because he doesn't have the team around him that those other guys do. And there's a lot of people saying that Deshaun Watson's successful because of the team. I'm interested to see what he can do. But I don't mind this move because he's at 11 days. They played last Thursday, and it's time. Mike Glennon's not going to get you anywhere, and Trubisky showed well. So we'll find out tonight how that goes. Let's talk some CFL, though. Edmonton is in Montreal today. We'll keep an eye on that. We welcome in Tiger Cats play-by-play man Marshall Ferguson back to the Big Show on TSN 1290. How are you, Marshall?
Well, trip into the Peg, got home, had some turkey last night, and headed back to Hamilton this morning.
Wow, that's a very good weekend for you, and I would suppose it's the trip was even made nicer by a big win by the Tiger Cats. Give us your overall impressions of the Tiger Cats and the victory over the Bombers on Friday night.
Yeah, it's funny. That's the same thing that my mom always says whenever the Tiger Cats win. Oh, good, yeah, it must have been an enjoyable trip for you then. I'm like, I don't really care. I mean, I've been around this team long enough to understand what matters and what doesn't, and sometimes they take a lot of false positives out of things, as I think any franchise does that gets wins that might be a little questionable at times, but that was a good win for them, so it made things more interesting to the conversation. I will say this, though, guys, the thing that I wish would have happened earlier on here is that they would have found themselves in the way that they have over the last six games. And by found themselves, I don't mean they're the best team in the CFL or anything like that. I just mean they are respectable, they are competitive, they find a way to be able to stay in games, they can close out drives when they need to. If they would have found that stuff 4 or 5 weeks earlier, I think we're talking about them being right there with the Argos, maybe winning the East even though they had a slow start, and maybe hosting a playoff game at this point. But now we're looking at the math as we get down to the final 4 weeks after this Edmonton-Montreal game today, and I think a lot of people in Hamilton are kind of saying, man, we just found it too late. Like, it's not a bad situation to be in to you know, try to win your game over Ottawa, at least one of them, the one that you have left, and then having to sweep Montreal is a definite possibility, even if you lose to Calgary coming up on next Friday night. Everything's still in the picture, but you're going to need some help. And it's like, man, you wouldn't have needed help if you would have found yourself earlier. And maybe that was just them being stubborn and not wanting to make the switch to June Jones or away from Ken Dawson in any way that they eventually did, which helped them. So the big picture stuff, I think people are just kind of wishing right now in Hamilton that maybe they would have accomplished this earlier. Smaller picture, that game in Winnipeg, I thought that was Jeremiah Masoli's best game of the year. Their second down conversion rate was something like 59%, which for the season they've been averaging around the mid-30s to low 40s. So there was a noticeable difference in the way that they played that game, and it was impressive to see in a one-game showing.
Marshall, the Bomber defense has a knack of giving opposing quarterbacks their best nights of the season. Your thoughts on what's called defense here in Winnipeg?
I know you're not a fan of it right now, Troy. I mean, when I were texting yesterday, for people that obviously were involved in our conversation, I like their defensive backfield, especially to the boundary. Like, I like Chris Randall. I like TJ Eve. I like the way they play the game. I like their Will linebacker combination with their Sam. Like, Mo Leggett, I think, is among the most talented ball-hawking guys in all of the CFL, and I love what they've done with Kyle Knox when he's been healthy. I know he's more of a special teams ace, but having him over there and then being able to mix in Santos Knox, I think, is a really nice player as well. So there are pieces of that defense that I genuinely like. Like, when I look around at the Tiger Cats, of course, they have Simone Lawrence at Will linebacker, so you don't really need a Santos Knox. But, man, I would take a Mo Leggett at Sam linebacker in a second. Even though they have Abdul Kanae, we're still figuring out in Hamilton what the heck Abdul Kanae is, because he's only played in like two and a half games at this point. So I like parts of their defense, but the way that they really gave up yardage to the Tiger Cats in Detroit is that the Tiger Cats have had such a renewal of spirit when it comes to the running game. It's something that I could have never predicted. I'm not sure that I expected to see it in the next 10 years, let alone just in this year, that an organization that has perpetually been up around an 85% passing play call selection is all of a sudden basically going like 65-35 or even 60-40 at various points in the ballgame. I still have to crunch some of the numbers on it. I was tracking the game while I was back in Kingston for Thanksgiving with my folks, but, I mean, the play that stuck out to me in this entire game that really set the tone for what was going to happen was the opening play of the game when the Tiger Cats get the football. They run the ball with Alex Green. They go off tackle, and it goes for like 2, maybe 3 yards off the top of my head. And in that play, I kind of look at it, and I'm like, all right, yeah, that's respectable. You know, you're trying to set yourself up second and medium, second and short. That's fine. But we're looking at it, and it's second and eight. And second and eight, let alone, you know, anything second and two, second and three, second and four, is a passing play under the Tiger Cats since I've been covering them since 2015, 2014. And on second and eight, Alex Green gets a handoff on the second play of the ball game in his own end of the field, and he was able to run for 9 yards and get a first down. And I have to admit, Coach John Salavanis is my color guy on the TSN 1150 Hamilton broadcast. We just kind of looked at each other as I finished saying, and that's a first down for the Tiger Cats, and he just started laughing. Like, he was chuckling under his breath because he's like, I don't know what team I'm watching right now. Like, that was second and eight, second play of the game, setting the tone, trying to figure out what you want to run. They scripted in a play on second and long to run the football, and they were able to pick it up. And I think that was kind of the moment where whoever was calling the plays, June Jones, Stephen Potasik, otherwise up in the booth, probably realized if we can run it on second and eight on the second play of the game when the defense is supposed to be as fired up as it's going to get, we might as well just lean on the run. And sure enough, they did. And I think that was the biggest reason why that Winnipeg defense gave up the type of night that they did, because Jeremiah Masoli, I've been watching him since he was at Oregon, guys. I've seen him at Ole Miss. I've watched him in practice with the Tiger Cats. I mean, I've followed his career very closely, and I've gotten to know him pretty well because he understands that I've watched him for a long time, and I think he respects that as somebody who covers media. And so when I talk to him about what he's trying to accomplish, it's very clear that Jeremiah Masoli is a 5 times better quarterback when he has a running game. Like, when he was at Oregon, I believe he had LeGarrette Blount in the backfield. Like, when he was at Ole Miss, they had backs that would just slash and pick up yardage in zone read situations or triple option, whatever you want to call it. And he's such a better quarterback when he has that threat because he himself is, of course, the purest form of a dual threat quarterback. And so that, to me, as soon as you get the ground game going right now in Hamilton, you're going to cause havoc for the other team because Masoli then becomes so much better.
I'm very impressed with June Jones and the job he's done. I'm impressed with Masoli. Does this solidify their future going forward into next year and beyond?
I hope so. I'm a fan of what they've done. I'm right there with you. I think that they have not necessarily concretely put their place in for next season, but June Jones seems to relish the opportunity to be able to take over an organization and improve them. And I love that about him, because that's exactly the type of guy that you had to have coming in here. You could not have a Dan Hawkins that went into Montreal and just thought, yeah, I'm just going to fix everything in 1 year. Or, you know, somebody who flies in and just says, oh, I'm just going to, like, even a Jeff Tedford when he went into BC, like, yeah, I'm here. I'm a good football coach. I'm just going to take over and make everybody look better, and then I'm going to get out of here. I think June Jones enjoys rebuilding things, and he enjoys doing it over not just a six-month period like he's been signed on to. I think he enjoys doing it in like a 2-3 year window where it's just something that he likes, that he feels comfortable doing. It seems like he brings it up every time that he's in a press conference right now, whether it's with us or with the away media. Like, you guys, I heard his press conference when he was in Winnipeg, where he essentially said, I'm sure that anybody who's followed my career who's in this press scrum right now realizes the places I've been have been kind of down in the dumps, and that I've taken joy in trying to turn them around. That takes a special type of person, and it was required in the Hamilton job. So I think that June Jones should be back. I like the way the offense has worked. I think Hamilton fans have a renewed perspective on what professional football in Hamilton should look like when you have a ground game that you can go to 20 times a game, that averages around 5 yards per carry, that puts your quarterback in good situations. Because for the last 3 or 4 years, whether they've been having success or not, I genuinely think Hamilton fans who love their defense and love their running game have been looking around and going, why can't we be like Calgary, where they can run the ball 25 times a game, a couple of times a year, and just set a tone and make people worry about the ground game? Nobody in the CFL was worried about the ground game until June Jones came in. Now it might be the most dominant part of what they do. And as for Masoli, what he's been able to accomplish, I think he definitely deserves the opportunity to come back if he would like to, because he is a free agent at the end of the season. I think with June Jones being in-house, he's much more likely to come back in free agency than he would be in any other coaches in that spot.
Marshall, thanks for this. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm glad you got some turkey. You need to start gaining weight at this age.
Oh, I already got
You're in too good a shape, man.
I got some Santa Lucia pizza while I was out there, too, and I'm still working it off. So.
There you go. That'll help.
Thanks so much, Marshall. Take care, man.
Thanks, guys.
Marshall Ferguson, the Tiger Cats play-by-play man, joining us here on The Big Show. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is next, and we'll hear from Matthew Perreault on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through at 780-1290 as TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending 5 lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. Includes return airfare to and from Las Vegas, free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. 2 hockey tickets to the Jets and the Golden Knights, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. 4 nights accommodation on the Strip at the MGM Grand Hotel. And $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Mr. Kevin Olszewski, and 5:15 p.m. on the Afternoon Ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. Next grand prize announcements coming up October 23rd and November the 6th. And congratulations to this morning's third grand prize winner, Sharon Zisk. Her and her husband will be going off to Vegas, and she's very excited for that and said she couldn't wait to tell her husband on Thanksgiving Monday. For more information, you can check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and us here at TSN 1290, Ernie Meschowski is our latest winner from Saskatoon.
Nice. We got a pile of people that listen to us to the beautiful province to the west, my friend. It's after Labor Day. We can speak like that. Saskatchewan.
Yes, I'm always really thankful for the people who listen out of province as well, in Calgary and Saskatoon and Regina. Rob Van Stone of the Regina Leader Post, massive Jets fan. You know Rob,
a bunch of people in Saskatchewan are, right?
Rob tells me a great story. Like, he and his nephew are such massive Jets fans that his nephew, and this was a couple of years ago, I think they still do, but is in university. And he would pick him up after university at 3 o'clock, drive out here to a Jets game on a weeknight at 7.
How cool is that?
Head out at like 10:30 or 11 right after the Jets game, get back to Regina at 3:30, 4 in the morning, and his nephew would get up and go back to university the next day.
That's awesome, how
diehard Jets fans they are from Regina.
That's some great memories there, huh?
Oh, those for sure.
Stuff? That's super cool, man.
Who's our latest qualifier on Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by us here at TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca?
It is Doug Oberick.
Doug Oberick.
Obie.
Congratulations, Doug. We appreciate you qualifying here on TSN 1290. And we wish you the best of luck on their next two grand prize draws, October 23rd and November 6th. And once again, congratulations to Sharon and her husband, who are off to Vegas, our third grand prize winner. Two more to go. Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers tonight. Matthew Perreault, after practice yesterday, was asked about getting out of the funk the Jets are in after their first two games of the season.
Competing usually takes care of everything, you know. If everybody comes out on the ice and have the mindset where you're not going to lose any battle tonight, you're going to do everything it takes to block a shot and to keep the puck out of your net, then we'll have a chance.
I giggle a little. That the fourth goal that was scored when Kulikov is losing his mind and looks like he's playing in Division VI at the Adult Safe Hockey League at Canlan or something and chasing the puck all over the place. And then Perreault goes down to block the shot down to his knees, right, and looks like an 8-year-old spinning by the play towards the board. It's just
chaos.
Such a gong show, man. But like we all know Matthew Perreault, what he brings to the table here. I don't know why the boys are so messy and mixed up right now defensively, but hopefully there's some sort of magic dust they can sprinkle on one another here before it, because man, if they ain't tuned in tonight, look out.
Well, they have to be tuned in to maybe give up three goals.
Yeah,
against McDavid and company. That's the scary
we'll
part.
Be a little
of
upset
game.
And dropping one to Vancouver.
Oh, that's just awesome. Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah. And talking to some people covering the Canucks game, like apparently the Canucks, and I only saw the highlights. Like, really went after McDavid and the Oilers. They tried to make it physical. They tried to take him out, like, you know, punish him physically, not take him out, but, you know, go at him, go at the Oilers, made it physical, sort of the price to pay. So it made me wonder, you know, Jets have so much to worry about their own game tonight, but how do they approach not only getting their own game back on track, but facing the Oilers? What's the best strategy here with taking on the Oilers?
I sure don't mind. I don't think the Oilers are going to mind. You know, like anytime Lowry's on the ice, I think they'd like to have McDavid. Do you want to get physical with us? Feel free to do so, man, and see how physical you get seeing my nameplate from about 20 feet.
That's the issue.
Right?
This is going to have to be a game where Paul Maurice is very, very, very cautious about who he puts out there at certain. He's not. I mean, look, you can't have Adam Lowry second in ice time among forwards anyways through two games with who the Jets have out there. But if he's anywhere near that again tonight, they're going to get blown out again. They have to be very cautious about who they put out there against them. And to me, if they're having this much trouble inside their own zone early in the season where it's just utter chaos every single shift, if I'm Paul Maurice, I'm almost leaning towards taking a page out of the Tortorella book with the Rangers. And saying we're putting five guys in the slot area. What options are there?
PK? That's what they're doing on the PK.
They're taking away the most dangerous spot on the ice, and they're collapsing around their goalie as opposed to leaving guys alone all over the side of the net for tap ins. You know, shift in and shift out.
You know what was really weird in the game against Calgary is I think it was the last power play Calgary had. It was definitely well into the third period. But the Jets got really aggressive in the neutral zone, at the blue line. They got super aggressive, and they're jumping on the puck carrier right away. Even in their own zone, they were. It was like for one penalty kill, they changed something up. It was really strange. So I don't know if that might change here tonight, but yeah, that whole, like what you're talking about, Wicks, there, it's just, you wonder if you're Paul Maurice. How do you appeal to the guys, and are they going to put into effect the coaching and everything in place anyway? Because something is just inherently wrong here.
I'm hearing a lot, as I'm sure you two are as well, through the first two games about Adam Lowry leading the forwards in ice time. But as far as I could see, he's basically the only guy that plays both power play and penalty kill. So if you look at the Calgary game, that's 9 opportunities between the 3 power plays and the 6 penalty kills. And then you look at the Toronto game, same thing, 8 power plays and then the penalty kills in that game. What are your thoughts on that and Adam Lowry being – like, to me, it's just specialty teams is the reason for that.
Well, do you think that's going to dwindle? That will be forever. That's just the way it is then, right? If that's the way they're going to utilize them, Adam Lowry is going to be the guy with the most ice time.
Well, yeah, like it depends on – to me, it's a specialty team. Like I don't expect Patrick Laine to have more time than Adam Lowry if you're killing penalties all the time. Like on the PK, he's just not – or Wheeler or Scheifele, like those guys if they're not out there. Like to me, I just keep hearing why is – the blanket statement of Lowry should not be the most used forward – I understand that philosophy until you look at the specialty teams. If he's the only guy playing both and you're facing that many and having that many man advantages, I don't – like I'm not sitting here going Paul Maurice is playing Adam Lowry more than any other forward because he thinks he's the best forward. That's just his role on the team with the PK and the power play.
And I don't think it should be, right? Like I think they're putting a lot of hope still. Like they're really trying to mold Adam Lowry into being one hell of a player, and you just kind of wonder the mentality behind that. I don't know. I'm not so sure about what they're doing there. From whether it's on either, I think on either. You could argue certainly on the power play, like having him out in front like that, I would much rather see Dustin Byfuglien in the role of Adam Lowry right now on that top power play.
Yeah, I just, to me, I don't know if there's a game situation where I can look at it and say Adam Lowry should be top 1, top 2, top 3 in minutes per game. I'm sorry, he's not that good of a player. And 5 minutes shorthanded, how do the Jets do special teams the past couple of games? Their penalty kill's been eviscerated by 2 yep. clubs in a row. Toronto, I can understand at least because their power play was real, real. I think they might have finished, at some point they were first in the league in power play last year, but the Flames, they don't have the same firepower that Toronto does. And I can't really excuse it on game situation.
Who would you change on the penalty kill? Like who would you play more than Lowry?
Well, I would make a... You don't see Mathieu Perreault out there at all, and that is interesting to me. With the way he skates, how smart he is with his stick and all the rest of it, and he could, you know, or even a guy like Brian Little, who's you know, shorthanded 28 seconds a game is what he's averaging compared to Lowry. Like Lowry right now at 346 and Mathias at 242. But you know what, though, boys, the bottom line is, and I wrote this in my notes Saturday night, it's as much trouble as anyone might have with the personnel. It's more about the system of their power penalty kill that's killing them.
We'll open the Boss Pizza fan line at 9. Jonathan Davis talks more hockey on the Big Show next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. Full day coverage. Lineups should be on the Don Vito roundtable around 11 a.m. Expect the Jets to hit the ice during the roundtable. Kevin Olszewski should have an update for you. Of course, Gondola Pizza warm-up at 2, and the afternoon ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph starts at 3. They'll go till 6:30 tonight. And that's when Kevin Olszewski will be back with the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show, a special 90-minute edition, because puck drop between the Jets and the Oilers is at 8 p.m. live on the station tonight with Mr. Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns with the call. And then Olszewski and friends will have the Huron Windows postgame show. The Boss Pizza fan line will be open on the postgame show. The fan line will be open at 9 o'clock today on the Big Show as well to get your thoughts. Jets and Oilers, Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets game day. To continue the hockey talk on the Big Show now with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki, we welcome back into the program from West Coast Hockey, Mr. Jonathan Davis. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. How are you doing today? I understand you're on your way to Vegas.
Well, yeah, it's off to Vegas tomorrow morning. Down in Anaheim tonight for the Ducks and the Flames, and we could see a bit of history tonight down at the Honda Center because Calgary, you know, this is their house of horrors. They haven't won in Anaheim in a regular season since 2004, and they got a good shot at breaking that streak tonight.
They mentioned that, or Glenn Gullickson did, after winning their home opener, which I think they were 0-7 until they beat the Jets on Saturday, and mentioning, sort of subtly referencing their streak in Anaheim, that's their next game, is said we're quote-unquote trying to exorcise a few demons. What did you see out of Calgary in the first two games so far, and do you expect Jágr to be in the lineup tonight?
Don't expect Jágr to be in the lineup tonight. Maybe Wednesday against L.A. I mean, I think, you know, is more likely of the two games. But, you know, look, I think, you know, look, the first game for Calgary against Edmonton, they just looked awful. And then somehow the Winnipeg Jets tend to make teams so far in this young season look really good. It was unbelievable. I mean, watching that game, I'm like, okay, Winnipeg is looking pretty good, 3-1 at the end of the first, and then Calgary just said, okay, enough's enough. I like what we've got from, you know, what Calgary has. You know, that back end, you know, is as good as anybody else in the league. And I mean, it's a skilled group of forwards, at least in the top six. So I just think that, you know, they're a team that's going to be knocking on that playoff door. I think, you know, that they're going to be that third seed most likely. So, you know, they continue to trend in the right direction, and I just think they're going to be a formidable opponent in the Pacific Division all year.
A real good chance here that tomorrow night Vegas goes 3-0 maybe against Arizona. Your thoughts on just what you've seen early on anyway from this George Gallant-led team?
Well, you know, they've got obviously, you know, and having Marc-Andre Fleury back there in net, you've got such a stabilizing force. He was phenomenal, I thought, in both games, both in Dallas and in Arizona, and especially in overtime, he came up with a lot of big saves. And then James Neal, wow! I mean, what can you say? You know, three goals in the two games, and just a dominant force. And you know, and now I finally understand why James Neal wasn't moved by George McPhee. And I don't know if you guys got a chance to see some of the gruesome photos of what his hand and wrist look like from off-season surgery and the plates that he had put in. But yeah, I mean, you know, look, this is a team that's good. You know, they're not going to outscore you. There's no track meets that they want to get themselves involved in. So as long as they can continue to play, you know, good defense and have a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury back there in net, they've got a chance to stay in most games.
Jonathan, the LA Kings are 2-0. Jonathan Quick's playing well. Some people have them in the playoffs. Some people don't. Where do you sit with what you've seen from them after two games?
Well, you know, watching this team play, they're definitely a different team than what we saw in the Daryl Sutter era. And we talked about it before in the show that they want to play more of an aggressive style of play, and that's the way they have played in these first two games, more of an attacking style game, more of the game of today. And Jonathan Quick has been, I would say, at least in game one, was definitely their best player when they got outshot 17-5 in the third period against Philadelphia. But, you know, this is just, when you're looking at this team, I like the balance. You know, they've had goal scoring from three of the four lines so far. The big thing to me, you know, is a guy like Adrian Kempe for the LA Kings long term. This is a guy that they're counting on, you know, to be their third line center. And the disappointing thing from their game against San Jose on Saturday night was that he only played 7 minutes, and that's not very encouraging. But all in all, when you look at, you know, the thing that shocked me most about their game on Saturday against San Jose, guys, was that, you know, they outshot the Sharks, I think it was something like 32-19. That's something that they've never been able to do against San Jose. They controlled the tempo of that game, and that just kind of tells me where this team is at now compared to where they've been in years past.
JD, try and make sense for me. The fifth goal that the Jets surrendered against Calgary, where twice we see Dustin Byfuglien scoot up to the blue line and trying to fly the zone, basically, and the glide backwards And then there's no way he doesn't see Versteeg making a move to the net, and there's just zero level of effort involved in trying to stop or make things more difficult for Versteeg, who eventually makes it 5-3 in a one-goal game, third game of the year. That's what we're seeing from Dustin Byfuglien.
Yeah, that's something that you would see in, like, squirt hockey, and that's just not acceptable at all. You know, you make two mistakes there that you pointed out, Troy. You see him at the blue line and then not getting back. You know, this is the big problem with Dustin Byfuglien. It's high risk and high reward. And I just think that, you know, at some point, Paul Maurice just needs to sit him down. I think, you know, it's got to change. Because if you know, discipline is something that the coach, you know, can easily control and enforce, and if he doesn't enforce it and this continues to be a bad habit, then I think eventually it could cost Paul Maurice's job. But you know, look, Troy, we've talked about it before with Dustin Byfuglien. This is a guy that you know, his hockey IQ to me is just, it's below average. There's so much skill there, but it just seems at times that it's, you know, Dustin Byfuglien plays for the name on the back of the jersey as opposed to the name on the front.
Jonathan Davis joining us from West Coast Hockey on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 39 minutes past the hour. Open the Boss Pizza fan line at the top of the hour. What do you expect for the Anaheim Ducks this year? Are they a Stanley Cup contender again is what I'm asking. I think everybody's in agreement. They are a playoff team, but can they win this year?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think they are a cup contender, and I think, you know, it wouldn't shock me, you know, if they finish first in the West and win their sixth Pacific Division title. You know, but the biggest problem for Anaheim is that, you know, you look at that roster right now and how beat up it is. You know, still no Sammy Vatanen and Hampus Lindholm on the back end. No Ryan Kesler. Ryan Getzlaff, Patrick Eves, and Nick Ritchie all were out for the game against Philadelphia. So, you know, we're talking seven regulars right now that are not in the lineup. And they played, I thought, you know, in their first two games, you know, they've come away with three out of a possible 4 points in their first two games, a win over San Jose, and then they lost in overtime to Philadelphia. And, you know, as long as they can continue to put together some points and at least come away with the loser points, and they're going to hang around. But, you know, that's the biggest thing right now for them to overcome. There's no question the skill is there. I believe in this team. I think they are the best team in the West, or maybe, you know, put them up against Edmonton. You know, maybe they're 1-2. But I just think that, you know, right now they just have to weather the storm of injuries to really get a true gauge on this team.
It's early, but the Toronto Maple Leafs look like one heck of a handful offensively. Your thoughts on what they're doing so far?
My God, you know, it is remarkable, and it was interesting just to see what you know, they showed on Hockey Night in Canada their quick strike capability and how they can make something out of nothing. And, you know, they were getting the puck on their, you know, they get control of the puck, and I think they showed like 7.5 seconds later that puck was in the net. Offensively, we've known, you know, just from what we saw last year with this team, there's so much skill up there. But let's not lose sight of the fact that, you know, it's still a team that gave up 5 goals and blew a 5-2 lead on Saturday night to a Ranger team that, you know, really shouldn't be able to score 5 goals too many nights. So, you know, I think there's still some questions on the back end. Mike Babcock, I'm sure, will do his best to tighten things up. But they are a scary group offensively. There is so much skill up there. And they're as deep down the middle, you know, I think, as any team in the NHL right now.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because I look at their defense corps, and I'm not that in love with it at all. But between Frederik Andersen and the amount of goals they scored, it looks impressive as a team.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, you know, nights like you saw against, you know, the Rangers on Saturday night, they definitely have the ability to outscore you and win games. But, yeah, I mean, look, there's still questions on the back end, you know, with Jake Gardner, Morgan Rielly, Zaitsev. I mean, I think Morgan Rielly can develop into that number one guy. I don't think he's there yet. And you've got Ron Hainsey back there to provide some stability. But, you know, we're talking about a much older Ron Hainsey. So you know, there's still questions on the back end, but there's a lot of talent up front. And I think Freddie Anderson is an elite goaltender and has the ability to steal games and keep you in games. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, I don't want to put him in the Grant Fuhr category, guys, but, you know, I think that Freddie's good enough to just say, you know, that they can win 8-5 games because Freddie will make the stop when he needs to. And if he gives up 5 goals on a night, you know, I think there's confidence that this team can score 6.
From what you've witnessed so far in preseason, now with a couple of games under their belt, are you expecting much improvement from Arizona?
I still think that they're just good enough to lose games on many nights. I like the team. I think, you know, Antti Raanta is a good. I like Antti Raanta on the back end. I like Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Charmelson, you know, on the blue line. It definitely adds a lot of stability to that roster. And then you've got, you know, a guy that could be Rookie of the Year in Clayton Keller, and you've got Domi. You know, there's a lot of skill there. I still think it's going to be a bit of a learning process. I just, you know, not a playoff team, but a team that is, you know, they're still a year or two away from being a playoff team, but they're definitely going in the right direction.
Jonathan, we appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this. Before we let you go, Brandon Rewicki wants to know your thoughts on the Flyers.
Oh, you know, I'm bullish on the Flyers. Watching them play against L.A. in the Kings' home opener, they are a fast and quick team. I still think there's some questions on the back end, but I really liked Claude Giroux playing the wing. I think, you know, watching the chemistry between him and Couturier, they're a good team, and you don't want to get involved in a track meet with them because they're darn fast.
Happy Canadian Thanksgiving, my friend. Enjoy your day.
You as well, boys.
Thanks so much, JD. Take care, man.
Jonathan Davis from West Coast Hockey. Your thoughts on the speed of the Flyers?
Yeah, it's kind of fun. It's nice having a team that doesn't rip your heart out and question your existence. So it's been a good couple of games.
Question your existence on a Thanksgiving Monday. We'll do more questioning of our existences and delve into the Jets and the Bombers and everything else as we tee up the Boss Pizza fan line next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers tonight on TSN 1290, 8 p.m. This is The Big Show. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. And 11 minutes away from your phone calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We'll start, gentlemen, with your thoughts on the Jets' 6-3 loss to the Calgary Flames on Saturday.
Good start, I suppose, and then the crap hits the fan, and which eradicates the good start. The level of debacle in their defensive zone has got to be humiliating for everyone involved, and it sets, and I think rightfully so, Jets Nation on fire with great concern and maybe even something more than that. But just what we're seeing and witnessing, it's really hard to accept and wrap your mind around. So much of it is so terribly basic, whether it's D-zone coverage and some of the penalty kill, the traffic in front lining up. Where there's two games in a row where there you can catch a still frame of all the Jets being in a straight line out to the shooter at the point while not pressuring him at all. It's just ridiculous and really, really sad what we're seeing right now from the Jets.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna listen to the argument of it's only two games into the season. It's early into the season. We've seen these issues for years. I don't need to wait any longer. They just have to get fixed, and they have to get fixed ASAP because them going up 3-1 made it worse what happened after that because they were playing just fine. Like there was no reason for a collapse to happen, but this team for some I don't know what it is, but just the lack of any sort of mental fortitude where something doesn't go your way for 2 minutes and you pack your bags and go home. Like, I've never seen a team and a group of players just, any sort of adversity comes in and they just, they can't deal with it. And they just lose every semblance of playing as a five-man unit out there. And how Paul Maurice figures that out, I mean, he's got a lot of challenges, but that's one of the main ones.
The thing that stands out to me is, yes, they're the same issues, but never this dramatic. Like, I know it's only two games, but the defensive woes and the penalty kill and power play, all this stuff has been the issue for a couple seasons, but not to this dramatic point. And I thought Dennis Bayek was right when he said a lot of it looked like it was getting better and not only maybe not fixed totally, but looked good in the preseason. And then the first two games, like, it's just off the wheels, like off the trail that from what I've seen in the past.
Yeah, I don't know that I can agree with that. Certainly that it's never looked like this, not this early maybe. And even the preseason, there was what was everyone saying during the preseason? No, it's just the preseason.
Well, no, the power play looked great in the preseason.
Well, sure, man. But that you can't, like, I'm not talking about strengths. I think strengths during preseason are fool's gold. But weaknesses, I think, and especially when they're a continuation from concerns of the past, are things you better take seriously. And defensively, these things were already somewhat evident.
Here's forward Matthew Perreault on the loss in Calgary.
Start was good. We were competing hard, and then all of a sudden it's like they get a couple goals, and we lose our minds out there and start running and trying to compensate for another, like just trying to do too much. So just calm down, and you know we're gonna get scored on sometimes. We just can't have those stretch of like 3-4 goals in a matter of like 5 minutes, and just takes us out of the game.
I couldn't agree more. I mentioned this in the Toronto game, and it's something I've seen throughout the past few seasons, and I saw it again in Calgary. There's a point where this team gets scored on or gives up some goals or maybe is tied, and the mental aspect of the game just leaves them, and the body language shows me that they look defeated. And then it gets individual, and they try to do more things than they probably should, individually as opposed to stick to a system. That's just what I see.
Yeah, and I have a lot of trouble wrapping my mind around that, because you're saying that if they're up, they can be like that. If they're even, it can be like that. When they're down, it can be like that. So I don't really understand the entirety of what you're saying there. But
well, to be clear,
this
Troy,
mentally
like,
fragile, that's how can that be when you're in the NHL?
It's not when they're up. It's when they're up, they're rolling. Like, I still believe if
they were up 3-1 in this game.
Yeah, and then they gave up the lead, and it falls off. And in Toronto, I think if they get one of those three power play goals, it's a totally different game, even if they get tied.
But they fell off in the process of giving the lead up. It's not like it got to be a tie game, and all of a sudden the wheels fall off. The wheels fell off in the breakdowns that led to the game being tied up in the first place.
I think they're still competing till it's 3-3. And then after that, it just, now we're tied and there's a letdown.
Well, that's shocking. And if that's the case, they need to clear out the locker room.
Yeah. You can't have that kind of attitude and mindset. In any, this isn't just a hockey thing. In any sport, any walk of life even, this team used to be in that playoff year, and never even mind the defensive play and how well they played as five men out there on the ice together and how invested they looked and all that sort of thing. But when they went down, did you ever feel like the game was out of reach for the Jets? No. They had a number of comebacks during that season. But I don't know how it happened, and for whatever reason it has. But they get adversity now, and they shrivel up and just go away. And that's part of the issue, but them not being able to play competent defensive hockey is maybe the biggest thing. And I don't think it's a matter of having defensively minded players in or having players that are good defensively. I think they have, I think they have enough talent inside their own zone. It's just they can't get out of their own way is the biggest problem right now, and they're making life so easy on the opposition where you're not even giving your goaltender a chance in any of these games, because half the goals that are being scored are either right in around the blue paint or you're tapping the puck into an open net.
Are we in agreement it's not a goaltending issue?
Absolutely not a goaltending issue.
We haven't had a chance to find out.
Yeah, Steve Mason,
yeah, that's what I feel
played
too.
Well, yeah.
Bombers lose to the Tiger Cats on the weekend at home on Friday night and lose big time. It was 30 to 13. Sorry, I'm going to look.
30-13.
30-13, that's what I thought, yeah. So your thoughts on the loss to the Tiger Cats?
Well, another quarterback comes into town and has a career night, or the best night of the year for sure, and that was Mazzoli. Right? He looked. They made him look like the next coming of Doug Flutie, for Pete's sake. Same with the back, who looked pretty darn good, actually. Alex Green looked good. But the defense was a mess. Right? All great concerns still ongoing here for the defense, and I still am wonder going forward here. I believe that the Bombers could have won that game had Dan LeFevre gone in after Matt Nichols left the game injured.
Yeah, and this is another Winnipeg team that defense might be what kills this Bombers team, unfortunately. I mean, they're going to go to the playoffs and all that, but it's just, it's kind of frustrating to watch an offense that's as good as any in the league and a defense that just struggles to kind of do the most basic of things on a football field. And you wonder at some point, and Troy kind of mentioned the numbers too earlier, when your middle linebacker has four tackles in a game, and how many times have we heard that throughout the season? Two tackles, three tackles. I know Mike O'Shea's super, super loyal to his guys, but you wonder what a change that middle linebacker could potentially do to maybe kickstart this defense in the stretch.
It's too late for that this year.
Your thoughts on the Jets, your thoughts on the Bombers, your thoughts on the NFL, and we even posed this question today. Take away the Super Bowl titles, who's better, Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady? Who would you rather have? Anything and everything else on The Big Show on a Thanksgiving Monday, 780-1290, Boss Pizza Fan Line next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca on a Thanksgiving Monday morning. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Jim Tolf, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. The afternoon ride, 3 till 6:30 today with Hustler and Rick Ralph. Then Kevin Oshesky is a Manitoba Building Trades pregame show at 6:30 till 8. Jets and Oilers with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call at 8 p.m. And then the Huron Windows postgame show on TSN at 1290. The Boss Pizza Fan Line will be open on the postgame show. It's open right now on The Big Show, 780-1290. The Bombers lost to the Tiger Cats. The Jets lost to the Flames. NFL, Major League Baseball playoffs, anything and everything else you wish to discuss today on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Ray, you're kicking us off today. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, fellas. Got a comment and then a question, just a very minor question. So the comment is, you guys are talking about kind of Lowry's usage there, right? Like he's on the special teams a lot, the penalty kill and the power play. I think therein lies the problem. Like he's not a great penalty killer in my opinion, and obviously he has his shortcomings on the power play. So I think if you're only skilled on the power play, you can stand in front of the net. I think you can easily find another player who is fully capable of doing that. And on the penalty kill, like, I don't get this notion that we have such great defensive forwards, yet we're terrible in nearly every defensive stat and terrible in the penalty kill. If you look at other teams, I've mentioned it before, Minnesota, St. Louis, Chicago, look at some of their shorthanded players. They're all second or top-line guys, like Brandon Saad in Chicago. He kills penalties. Like, I don't understand why we can't have some of our more skilled guys killing penalties, and people say, oh, because it takes away from their even strength time. And that lies the problem. We don't have the depth where we can play the third or fourth line guys a little more to supplement some of those top line players to kill penalties. So, you know, just teams are much deeper scoring-wise. And we saw that with Toronto and, I guess, Chicago and Minnesota. So that was just my comment on that. Very minor question. Last time Ovechkin hit back-to-back 30 goals years, he went off for four straight Maurice Richards. What do you guys think he'll finish with this year?
Thanks for the call, Ray. Hang on if you want to weigh in a little bit more. I don't I don't find the Jets forwards all that great defensively. I find Brian Little a very good defensive center, and I think everybody else can improve.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, hey, man, Ray, I agree 100% with what you said there about the other teams in the league, for the most part, that have strong penalty kills, utilize a lot of their upper-end talent as their major penalty killer. I echo exactly what you said and have been for a while now, where the Jets keep putting out guys, their top four guys shorthanded for forwards for in trying to kill penalties here, very similar to last year. You're talking about the likes of Mathias and Lowry, Kopp and Tanev, and they're trying to get the job done with those guys as the forwards. But the one thing I would say, Ray, and watching the game against Calgary, I don't care who you have. If you put Marchand and Bergeron out there for the Jets and put them into the system that the Jets are playing and structure that the Jets are playing on that penalty kill, and they're going to be basically useless. I just don't understand what the Jets are even trying to accomplish here from a penalty kill standpoint, where they super collapse deep, that little box that they got. There's no pressure whatsoever to all the perimeter stuff because you see Brody out there at the blue line. Stop, look, all kinds of traffic. Send it in, no pressure. Guys are falling down, high slot, trying to block, screening the hell out of Mason. It's the worst penalty kill in the league, and they deserve being ranked 30th right now. And that's the thing. I think that the structure of their penalty kill is a bigger sin than the individuals they're sending out there trying to run it at a high level.
I don't find the forwards as big of a problem on the PK as the defensemen. I don't think the defensemen have been – they blow their coverage. They blow the box. They don't stay with their man. Kulikov twice now, once in Toronto, once against Calgary, going way too high. And that's where the back doors come from.
But the Kulikov thing was an even strength goal. That didn't apply against Calgary.
I think he did on one of the PKs as well.
The first and third goals for Calgary were both on the power play, and they both had outrageous traffic in front of Mason, right? The first one goes in clean, and the second one, the rebound, and Morrissey's trying to wrestle in front. I heard Paul Maurice, the quote, driving to the Leafs game one, that they're going to be collapsing low like that and beat the opponent to the rebounds.
They've lost every battle.
Yeah, and it's just that's.
Well, that's what I mean about the defense. Like I find the defense on the PK.
Well, they're to blame too. Is like it's not like it's just you fix the forwards, work on the penalty kill and everything. Everything's hunky dory, but
the fact
remains that that's the issue, right? And the real weird thing to me is in the neutral zone and on entries. The Jets are super aggressive on the penalty kill.
They were late yesterday for sure, yeah.
And that, in part, led to Brandon Tanev's goal, where he's up there trying to attack the puck carrier, and he makes a nice play, picks off the pass, and away you go. But they're aggressive, and the defense are aggressive at the blue line.
Yep.
But then once the puck's in, it's a complete 180, and it's just bizarre to me. And I just, like, players are way too good in the NHL now, where if you're going to give them time and try and block shots, you're going to be pulling the puck out of your net like we're seeing right now 25% of the time on the penalty kill. And the 75% efficiency usage you're running out there, you're not winning hockey games. They cannot win hockey games with their penalty kill. Forwards, defense, everything remaining the same. It's not going to work.
Boss Pizza Fan Line 780-1290. Before we get to our next call, how many goals does Ovechkin get this year? Does he hit 50?
You've got to think he gets to 50 unless he goes on one hell of a dry streak when he's already sitting with 7.
He's 43 and 80 now. Like you put 7 up in 2 games, and I'll go with 55. 55.
There you go, Ray. I'll say he hits 50. I think he gets 50. He's off to a great start, obviously. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show with Jim Troy and Brandon. Who's next?
Tom.
Tom, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, same to you.
I'd like to talk about the Blue Bombers. I agree with most of your assessment. What a shoddy effort it was by the defense. I disagree that it was a critical game for several reasons. I don't think they had a legitimate shot at first. They built up a cushion, and it wasn't against Edmonton and Saskatchewan. So it's a survivable loss. The problem is it's the defense. And that problem has existed since O'Shea got here, and he hasn't done anything about it. Last year was masked by an aberration of a turnover ratio that none of us will probably ever see again. I think it was plus 29.
That's right.
This year it's been masked by the increase in offensive output. But the thing is, if you can, you don't have to beat them long right away, because you can play underneath all day long. But if you do, like Hamilton did, it makes them scared. It's not just Hurl, it's the DBs as a group. And I don't know whether it's Hall's fault or the DBs just prefer to play that way, but they're too far off. And you can throw 8, 10, 12 yards all night long against the Blue Bombers, and any team can probably do it. So I can't believe that O'Shea hasn't addressed this problem in 3 years.
Well, I wouldn't say 3 years, because I think the defensive line is much better this year. And I think there's still some issues in the secondary, but I agree with you in the linebacking core. I mean, they've also been hit with, like, Ian Wild is a huge loss.
No, he's not.
You don't think he is?
Nope. Chris and I were talking about it pregame, where I think that Santos Knox, I wonder if Ian Wild gets his job back.
I like Santos Knox too, but having Wild there, he led the team in tackles last year, did he not?
He did. I think Santos
You can't
Knox
have both him and Santos
good.
Knox in the lineup?
I don't know. No. Well, you got Leggett and Santos Knox, so I don't know where he goes.
But I like the defensive line. I think that's improved, Tom. But you bring up...
But yet they surrendered 146 yards on the ground.
Well, overall this year, the D-line's not better?
Well,
They get more pressure on the quarterback than they did last year.
I like the talent that's out there for sure, but still, they just surrendered 146 yards on the ground, right? So, and the Green looks real good, but I think that game we saw against Edmonton where the defense looked pretty stout, I think that's an aberration. You still have to be really concerned with what we're seeing defensively here.
Anything else, Tom?
He's gone.
Turnovers, they don't win. Even the game against Edmonton, which I thought I saw some improvement too, it took a turnover late in the game to beat them. So I really don't think that, besides the defensive line, I agree with you, the pressure's there. The linebackers and the secondary simply aren't good enough to beat Calgary.
So after this loss at 10-4, like, are you saying they're just not good enough to beat Calgary, or are you not high on them anymore as a playoff team?
No, it's the same problem I've seen for 3 years.
Okay.
They line up. They're as good as Calgary on special teams and offense. I don't think they have the defense to beat them.
And that's the thing, right? Right? When you're talking about, I tweeted this during the game. If the Bombers can't get Mazzoli off the field in October, tell me how they get Bo Levi off the field in November. And that's the whole, like, if everything works out according to plan here, the Bombers will travel to Calgary for the Western Final. And you got Matt Nichols going up against that defense in Calgary. Right? And what level of success are you going to get there as opposed to Bo Levi up against the Bombers defense? And Hamilton putting together drives of 10 plays, 14 plays, 8 plays. If they don't create a turnover, they don't take anybody off the field. It's very similar to last year's playoff game against BC. It was watching those last two drives by BC to end up winning the game. It was like you knew damn well that the Bombers weren't going to force them to punt. Everyone is praying for a turnover. That's not good D. You can't base your future as a football team in the defense and praying for turnovers. You have to force teams to punt every once in a while.
Yeah, and that's their biggest issue. And I still believe that's Mike O'Shea's maybe biggest fault as a coach is the loyalty he's shown to Richie Hall in particular on the with the defense, because Tom mentioned talent maybe being an issue, and in the secondary I would probably agree on the one side of the field, but.
Although in the past number of weeks, they have been taking steps, but they're a long way away.
They're getting better, but like you said, everybody seems to have their best passing week against the Bombers secondary. But look what Euclid Cummins is doing at Edmonton this year.
Yeah,
he's got 5 sacks and 3 forced fumbles through 11 games. What did he do with the Bombers last year? A guy that in Toronto the year prior looked like he was on a short track to the NFL. Like the Bombers brought in a number of talented players even last year. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work out for them specifically because of the scheme that Richie Hall is trying to implement. And it hasn't worked for a number of years. And I think Mike O'Shea should have made the move going into this year to make a change there. And that lack of a decision might end up costing this team a chance to really, truly compete with Calgary.
Thanks for the call, Tom. We appreciate it. Boss Pizza Fan Line open 780-1290. We'll take a break, come back, and take more of your calls on an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers tonight at 8. More of you next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
It's my jam again. There's a few of them here.
I would never link this as a jam to JT.
No, me either. That's why it's kind of cool.
Fair.
Or odd, either one. Brandon, you know who this is?
Oh, come on now.
Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day on the Big Show. TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. The Boss Pizza fan line 780-1290.
I was going to hit you with a line there, but I like my jaw. I had to think it through in my head if I could
do
if
it.
If it was CRTC approved, I don't think so.
It's Holiday Monday. Let's do it.
Yeah.
They're not listening to CRTC. We appreciate you listening, though, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets game day. We're getting your thoughts on the Jets, their loss to Calgary, and, of course, what you expect tonight against the Oilers. Connor Hellebuck gets the start tonight. Before we get to more of your calls and delve more into this, I want to thank myself and Rick Ralph. We're invited out to the Ironman at Niagara.
You want to thank yourself and Rick Ralph?
Well, no, I want myself and Rick Ralph okay. were invited out to the – That you're right, that sounded – I want to thank myself. I want to thank Glenn from Aquatech, who had myself and Rick Ralph and Kevin Nealis out golfing at the Ironman at Niagara on the weekend. And it was a great time. We went out there. And the Ironman is the pin placements are extremely difficult. So the course is the same.
Okay.
But they put the pins like if there's a hill and right on the fringe.
Sunday placement.
Well, even worse than that. So you actually tee off and then like the pin is basically on a part of the green that you would never have the pin on.
Okay.
So it makes it very difficult.
Oh, that Ironman, maybe you guys are kicking out like 100 holes or something.
Well, I thought that too. But
jogging or something.
Ralph showed up and you ever seen Ralph golf?
Rick Ralph?
Yeah.
I would assume that he's long, slow, sort of Ernie Els type swing.
Oh yeah. Very Ernie Els. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Even when he rolls up.
Never loses a ball, probably.
So Evan and Glenn from Aquatech and Evan, of course, and everybody else who had us out, thank you very much. Niagara in great shape. And it was a fun day. I did not pull my weight, but I putted well.
Yeah,
I did have a birdie. I chipped in for a birdie.
You're the entertainment, more or less.
It was like Ken Weeb's aces.
Yeah.
He still shot an 87 with two aces, even with my chip in birdie. Yeah. Score was through the roof.
I don't know where I saw somebody got a hole in one. It was some
North
hockey.
North Van Rick sent it out.
Yeah,
he did
half a weeb.
Half a weeb.
Yeah, that might be my favorite golfer of all time. Half a weeb.
That was a par three from 220.
Yeah,
that's no messing around right there.
Weeb and I share a fantasy football team, and he always weighs in on Sunday, and I'm just waiting for it to be like, instead of Weber here, hey, JT, Weber here. I'm expecting aces here. How are you?
I saw him a couple weeks ago. I had to see Weeb walk in here. I think it was here. It drops off a stack of cash to JT. I'm like, what's that all about?
A lot of people at Niagara on Saturday would say, hey, like the show, are you going to talk about the Bombers D? Are you going to talk about Sam Hurl? And, you know, the Jets talk as well. So, and then ask me, is that true that Ken Weeb hit two aces? Even people I never met before, they're like, hey, were you actually with Weeb when he did that? I'm like, yeah, did he actually do that? I'm like, we wouldn't be putting this out there if he didn't do that. That would be very fake news, and I don't want any part of fake news. Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day, 780-1290. If you want to weigh in on the Jets and the Bombers and everything else that we're talking about today. Back to some comments from Paul Maurice after yesterday's practice in Edmonton, and he was asked if the issues the team has had the first two games is more mental than just X's and O's.
Mistakes are happening. I mean, that's a standard, right? You're always trying to teach and get the reads faster. The faster you make the reads, the faster your team looks. But, yeah, we just got to play a hockey game absolutely as hard as we can. No less for sure, but no more either, right? You're only playing one game at a time. All those old cliches, there's a reason for it. But they're carrying too much. But there's some pieces of our game that need some intensity improvement. That's a fact as well.
You got to make the right reads, though, right? Like not the Kulikov read and to cross over into the right side of the ice and the right read or else the wrong read can be a whole lot of trouble. And I like when you said the issues, the defensive issues. Had an old football coach who said, "We don't have issues. We have challenges." Okay?
Challenge away. What parts would you like to see, according to Paul Maurice, more intensity at? Is it the penalty kill? Is it the defensive, like the more intensity parts of the game?
I'm going to focus on one individual. And the more or less, like it's I don't know if it maybe used to disgust me. And it does even in a general sense. Like athletes that lack fire, it's a sin, an unforgivable sin. And when you're blessed with the talent to play the sport at a high level and you lack fire, to me, that is just something, to me, it's a poison of epic proportion in whatever locker room or clubhouse that you sit in. And when I see Dustin Byfuglien scoot up to the blue line and then turn, big circle, glide back, back up to the blue line, turn, glide back, and you see Versteeg, Tanev trying to catch Versteeg, and Versteeg, bam. And if Dustin Byfuglien turned that second time and put any effort into it whatsoever, he could have possibly disrupted that pass. When I see that, and you're asking me, you know, what you want to see intensity cranked up or a certain level, Dustin Byfuglien, where the F are you, man? And even finishing your checks, you're the biggest, strongest, baddest cat out there. And we have to wait. Game in, game out, and see, you hit someone and it's shocking. You should be, Dustin Byfuglien should, he doesn't need to, we were talking about this last year, he doesn't need to engage or enter into an open ice hit. One of those are great if they ever happen. Just finish your checks. You finish checks and that punishes people out there. Where is he right now? Mentally, it's just sad to me. And there's one guy right there. And what he does to everybody else on the bench and on the ice when he's playing at that level. Like, are you kidding me? The effect that he can have on this team? I know I keep jumping on Buff often, but, man, he's got big shoulders, all kinds of promise, and a lot of ways he defines this team.
Yeah, and you know what? You can't disagree with any of that. And I would tackle on top of Byfuglien and the rest of the team. And this team, I know last year was, I think, the tallest in the league and one of the bigger teams. Mm-hmm. And that's not really changing this year. They're definitely one of the bigger teams in the league. Would you have noticed that through two games?
No way.
Byfuglien spearheads that, but there's a lot of other
And throws the curve off.
Yeah, fair. But there's a lot of other big dudes on the team. And have you seen any big hits through two games or any notable finishing of checks, anything like that? Like I'm a big believer.
They were snarly.
Yeah.
Right? They were snarly in that stretch when they ended up making the playoffs.
They were like Kings Light.
Yeah, or
like little, Diet Kings.
Of the Blues Kings, that whole group, right?
Well, and are they too worried about not taking penalties? Like, that's the other main focus besides defensive.
Just don't use your stick. You won't take penalties.
I'm going to throw a name out here. Joel Armia.
He's been awful.
He's been awful for two games. And this is a guy that, you know, I mean the vets, and rightfully so, but to me this is a guy, and I know that was Dustin Byfuglien running around on that, but he's got to get that puck out. Instead of making that extra move at the blue line, and he hasn't shown anything in my mind. And when we're talking about like the Tanevs and all those and whether they should be in the lineup, I think we have to throw after two games Armia's name out there. Like if we're looking at when Dano's going to get in the lineup, and I thought Nick Petan had a good 10 minutes on Saturday, but Armia's got to show me something too, and that turnover as well. I mean, those are just mistakes that, as he said, is it more mental than the X's and O's? We'll take more of your calls when we get back after the break here on The Big Show. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Congratulations to Sharon Zisk, our latest grand prize winner in Hockey Nights in Vegas. She is our third of five grand prize winners who's now on her way to Las Vegas to take in the Golden Knights and the Jets on Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We qualified two individuals today as well, and your next chance to qualify is at 12:15 on the Don Vito Roundtable and 5:15 on the Afternoon Ride. Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day, of course. Afternoon Ride 3 till 6:30, a special 90-minute Manitoba Building Trades pregame show at 6:30 till 8. Puck Drop with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290 at 8 p.m., and then the Huron Windows postgame show with Kevin Olszewski and friends and the Boss Pizza Fan Line. And the Boss Pizza Fan Line is open right now with Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the big show, 780-1290. Andrew, you're on the program. Good morning.
Hey, morning, guys. I, for one, have been saying that I'm not a big fan of how Maurice has taken this team for about a year and a half or two now. This year, we, as everyone knows, we're one of the worst teams in the league. Our penalty kill is bad again. Our power play is bad again. Our defensive structure is still a problem. Byfuglien continues to be a problem. Our penalty kill remains stuck in the style, which is from the 1980s. Ironically, and you know, Jim, you've counteracted my opinion on Maurice a couple times by saying that he's brought us to the playoffs. The only reason we got into the playoffs is that year that there was a McDavid and Eichel race where there were teams racing to the bottom. That's why we got in the playoffs. So if you look at it, you got to exclude that year. And it's ironic that each year.
Wait a minute, Andrew. You get a team to the playoffs, you get them to the playoffs. And I admit it hasn't gone well for 2 years, and fair enough. But you can't tell me the Winnipeg Jets, who in six seasons now have never made the playoffs, so you can just laugh that off as if, well, other people were tanking.
I'm just saying there's an asterisk by that because there were clearly teams who were trying not to make the playoffs that year, and you can't discount that either. So that's all I'm saying about that particular year. If you take a look, we got into the playoffs and didn't win a game. And if you take a look at Maurice's record, we tend to be in some hockey games, just like we were against Toronto. We started well. Against Calgary, we started well. But once a coach on the other side makes an adjustment in the game, that's get out-coached. Maurice is getting out-coached time and time again. And anybody who has played or coached at a decent level knows that mid-game is when coaching really matters. And that's where our team tends to fall apart, is because we can't react to what other teams are counteracting within the game.
Okay, look, I don't. Maurice is not blameless in this. Don't get me wrong when I say this. But to me, you need to adjust as a coach in game, fair enough. But are you seeing the adjustments beating the Jets, or are you seeing the Jets fall apart? Like, do you see a game plan that's not being changed, and that's why the reason they've struggled in the first two games? Or do you see the team and the players themselves making glaring mistakes that they didn't make when they were up 3-1, or they didn't make in the first 15 minutes of a period?
Well, that's a good question.
Like, to me, I think the players deserve a lot to bear a lot of this. And Maurice isn't blameless. But this is the second coach that this team has struggled defensively with. And everybody wants to blame goaltending. Well, you now have a fourth goalie in there.
He hasn't mentioned goaltending.
No, but I mean, I'm talking in general. It's defensive play. And if the team falls apart mid-game, like, do you think the coaching has changed? I agree adjustments are needed. I agree, like, the coaching staff isn't blameless in this. But, like, come on.
Okay, well, and fair enough, Jim. But the thing is, you can take all those players. The defensive structure lies with Paul Maurice. It doesn't lie with Charlie Heidi. We know that.
Right. Yes, I agree. I agree with that. I agree
with
that.
The penalty kill, right? And you know what, guys? Like, I've seen players can like a coach, but maybe not necessarily believe in the system that's being put into effect. And then that is contributing to some degree in some of the breakdowns that we're seeing. And I really believe that's the case here, where I like what Andrew's doing and talk like the penalty kill specifically and defensive zone coverage. Something is wrong there. Something is not getting across to the players, and or there's a combination of X number of players not fulfilling their roles and responsibilities. And we all know one or two of the names for sure early on here that sort of jumping off the page in that manner. But there's no question whatsoever that ultimately who gets held responsible for teams or players that underperform. We all know it's the coach.
I agree that assessment because that's what I heard with Claude Noel. they all said, and a couple told me off the record, we all like Claude, but he would always say, this is what we're going to try, and we kept trying things that didn't work. What they liked about Paul Maurice is he came in and he never said, this is what we're going to try, this is what we're going to do. I don't think that disconnect is, from what I've seen, from the limited practices I've been to this year and last year, that that's the problem with Maurice and the players. I just think the players deserve, if not just as much, maybe even a little bit more of, because I don't see coaching affecting them blowing the zone or playing too high or leaving the guy open. I don't think a guy coaches, feel free to blow the zone before you have the puck.
No, but the only thing is, and I don't, you know, man, I try and do my darndest. I try and ask, too, as many people as I can to help me to understand the Jets' defensive system, right? And the back and forth, they seem to mostly be in zone right now, but then you're having guys like Buff who will follow, and Kulikov, who's kind of like a mini Buff in that manner sometimes, who follows and just kind of gets lost. And the stress that puts on the forwards, where you see a goal and it looks like a forward is irresponsible, but yet it was because his coverage has changed two or three times as one of the defensemen or the defense is sort of rotating and stuff. It's really messy. So that's got to go on the coaches. And if it's a specific player or two that's causing that much grief in the defensive zone, then it's going to be up to Kevin Cheveldayoff to identify that. Something's going to happen here. If this doesn't fix itself fairly quickly, there's got to be a profound change either with coaching or with personnel.
Or both.
The road that they're on right now is leading to great change one way or the other.
Yeah, the players should realize that they continue this, people are losing their jobs. That's the reality of the situation.
And if you're referencing the players there, Wicks, the interesting thing in trying to motivate and grab the attention of these athletes is they're dealing with guaranteed contracts. Yeah. So I don't know how, like, what can, if Paul, like, Paul Maurice inside that room, how do you appeal to Dustin Byfuglien specifically? And if you do take the hard stance to sit him, what does that do to everything involved? Like that I know, understand, and hey, what did Noel do? Noel got sick and tired of move him up front. Is that what it's going to take? Part two?
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I say, like, I again, Maurice and the coaching staff aren't blameless to me, but I think the breakdowns I see, I don't think any coach would coach that way or coach those things. I think those are player mistakes, and that's why I delve into the mental aspect of it and where they are. You know, as a team, when they face adversity in games. Andrew, do you have any more points?
Yeah, I just have a question for Troy, because as a former professional player, he knows better than probably all of us that when the coach doesn't hold somebody accountable, and by what I can see, and I can only see what I can see based on being at the games or watching them on TV, that Byfuglien has not been held accountable by Paul Maurice. And what that does to a player on the team is he puts his head down. When a player is allowed to do whatever he wants and is not held accountable because you work so hard, and then you see one of your teammates not work hard and then not be held accountable for it. So what I want to know from Troy is, if he's ever played for a team, if that's happened, what the reaction is by other players, because what I see is the Jets becoming demoralized during the game.
That's what I see too.
It definitely happened, and you would have other guys in the room. I've never been a part of a team where it's been one of the alpha guys in the room, though, that has been guilty of it. So that's the thing here. When Dustin, and I hate keep saying his name, similar to what Cassie Campbell said during the broadcast. I hate doing this, but this is just the reality of the situation. If he's running rogue. My understanding was it was Andrew Ladd in the past to go up to him and say, hey, man, we need you to this from you. And my understanding is that it's a little bit more difficult now when you got, like, Blake Wheeler. Like, who reels in Dustin Byfuglien? Who in that room, when you got the personality and that guy, that big of an alpha presence in that locker room, who can really appeal to him and reel him in? And hey, man, upon arrival, Paul Maurice did right? It was talked about all the time. When you get a new boss like that, it doesn't matter what you do for a living. Everyone's a little bit more sharp and tuned in to what's going on here. And that reaction to that team, that's a big part what propelled them to that playoff spot, right? Everything was better, sharper. Dustin Byfuglien was leading the team in that manner. And just a holy cow, who is this guy? People talking Norris, all those sorts of things. And now it looks like that attention to detail is waning again early off in this season when people were saying, remember the story last year? Play less minutes. He'll be tuned in. No, we're not seeing that so far.
I thought one of the best things Maurice did when he was hired was he didn't immediately move Dustin Byfuglien back to defense.
He told him he wouldn't move him.
And then it was some injuries, and then he put him back there. And I thought that's when you saw the most out of him was when...
You took it away and...
Like, it wasn't like I'm coming in and I'm giving you everything you want. It's, I'm going to keep things the way they were, and I'm going to evaluate for a while. And he evaluated for a while, then moved him back. And I thought that, I don't know if he was... Clearly he doesn't want to play for, but that movement and the not getting it immediately seemed to get the most out of him at that time. Andrew, thanks for the call. We have more to get to, so we'll have to move on. Good stuff. We appreciate you weighing in. 780-1290, right before we get to our next call. Alex Ovechkin is crediting his sister-in-law for his historic scoring binge at the start of the season. Quote, every time she's in town, I score a hat trick.
Yeah, she's been in town the first two games.
So right? The Capitals are going to move her to Washington, I understand. Back to Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
It's Sandy.
Sandy, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm a first-time caller.
Thank you, Sandy, for taking the time.
Morning, guys. Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
Got a bit of a cold, so please excuse my voice. I was just thinking about something. You know how last season, those seven last games of last season, the Jets were playing really good hockey, pretty good defense. They seem to be playing as a five-man unit in front of the goalie.
They won them all, right? Seven games.
Yeah, they won them all. They seem to. Byfuglien was playing better. Everybody was playing better. And my thought is, why not sit those guys down and make them watch those seven games over and over again? Because sometimes a picture is worth a thousand words. You can tell somebody something, but unless they see themselves doing it and remembering themselves doing it, I think that might spark something in them. And then with regards to Dustin Byfuglien, you know, doing his own thing on the ice sometimes, you know, maybe Paul Maurice does need to bench him one game and put Pullman in. Maybe that would send a message to him because, I love Byfuglien and stuff, but something needs to be done because he seems to be, he throws everybody out of whack when he does stuff like that. Like, he throws the other D-man out. He just, nobody seems to know what they're doing, especially that game against Toronto when Byfuglien was going after, what's his name? Austin Matthews.
Matthews and followed him across the ice. Yeah,
and he just kind of, he throws things off, like, because nobody knows at that point, like, who they're supposed to cover because Byfuglien's not covering the person he's supposed to be covering.
Well, and it comes down to, like, we're grading and evaluating the systems and the plan and all this stuff. And that's why I hold players accountable more than ever is because, is the plan flawed or are you not executing it? Because for 15 minutes against Toronto, I saw you execute it and then you stopped and you started doing that stuff and leaving the zone and leaving the back door wide open. Yeah. Not the zone, but your position. And then against Calgary, you're up 3-1. Everything was going good. You know, somebody on Twitter's weighing in with me saying, you think, of course, Maurice isn't making the coach those mistakes, but it's his job to make them stop. Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I understand absolutely it's his responsibility, and he's got to get to them. And I don't mind the fact of, like, I said this at the start of the year. I think the leash is real short this year, and I'm very interested to see how this goes over the next 3 to 4 games on who gets, you know, played and who doesn't and what Maurice does with this. Because when I see players not executing, I don't think that's a coaching change. I think that's on the player. I think the players need to bear some responsibility in this.
Yeah. No, I agree because, I mean, I used to play co-ed floor hockey. That was a totally different thing. But if anybody needs help reeling in Buff, I can do it. I was called Slash. Anyway, I'll let you guys go, and you have a great day.
Great thanks, call, Sandy. We appreciate you weighing in on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290.
There's no, but it does fall on the coach, man. And there's, you know, there's a two-word term for guys that freewheel and don't give you the level of commitment necessary to win. Coach killer. In all sports, they exist, man. Right? And, hey, you want to do your own thing? You know, you're either a leader on the team and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and setting an example for everyone, or you're doing something that's counterproductive to the ultimate goal of the team. And when he's tuned in, he's one of the best that there is, man. And maybe he has a great night tonight. But it all starts, it's up to Dustin Byfuglien what Dustin Byfuglien's going to be. And I think, hey, man, if things continue to go off the rails here, and if Paul Maurice needs to make a profound statement or shift to this team, what would it do for one game? Bring up Tucker Poolman, bam, on the right side. Put Buff into your top nine on the right side. I know he's not as productive as a forward, but I still think he's quite impactful, and he's going to bring more to the table, I dare say, than Joel Armia on the right side, and just makes your bottom six that much stronger. But what would that do? Like, how much of a you think of what Paul Maurice can do in a tough situation to shake up the team as much as possible? Might that be it?
Dustin Byfuglien played the most out of any Jet on Saturday, 25 minutes and 2 seconds, 307 on the power play, 116 on the penalty kill. Thanks, Sandy. Thanks, Andrew. More of your calls. We come back to The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Boss Pizza fan line on The Big Show, 780-1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Carl, you're on the Boss Pizza fan line. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Okay, so how bad is Steve Mason questioning his decision right now to come here? Going, oh, my God, like, what the hell did I get into?
Yeah, the only possible downgrade from Philly, right?
Yeah, funny, like, man. He's going, for the love of God, help me. Like, somebody get in front of a shot or pick up a guy. Couple comments on the team and their play. Like, where's the back check? And insert Brendan Lemieux on the fourth line to give you a shot at actually picking up a guy after you get beat. I don't know. To me, I just see these guys playing flat, no effort. Like, it's sloppy. And they get beat, and it's like, oh, well, we got Mason. We got a goalie now. You know, and the poor guy's getting peppered left, right, and center. Troy, I agree with your comments about moving Buff. Take him off, bring up Poolman. We have all this depth on our team, but now we're set in stone as this is our starting lineup.
Well, I don't think that, though. Like, I don't think that's your set in stone, and I think even when they sent Kyle Connor down, I fully expect to see him again this year. My point is I'm wondering how long that leash is. I wonder till when what you're suggesting happens. To me, it's not a matter of if. To me, it's a matter of when.
Maybe when you lose 7-2 tonight?
Yeah. Right. I mean, to me, Maurice has got, you know, it's going to be, you know, to me, it's 5 games. You know, five games is, you know, 6-7% of your season. If things don't shake around, if they don't come out of this, like, 3-2, like, they're shopping for a coach. And you know what? I see players getting moved and, because this was the year it's advertised, right? We're going to be, you know, we're here to win this year. And we're getting spanked.
Yeah, I had it at 10 to 15 games. If this continues, it might be sooner to that in my mind. But that's one of the interesting parts of this, to me, is the so-called leash I keep referring to with Maurice and some of the players. And I think it's way shorter than it was last year. I think they purposely gave more leeway than maybe even they wanted to, but I think that's different this year, and I'm very interested to see how that plays out if things continue this way.
I think the leash extends or contracts depending on the level of nightmare at hand, right? This could go off the rails really hardcore. Right now, it's got like one wheel up on the ledge sort of thing. If you get another nightmare tonight, right? You're looking at sort of exponential jumps of sort of the base, the man, everything starting to settle into panic with games upcoming against Canucks and the Hurricanes. But if the Jets suffer a similar loss as they just did to Toronto and Calgary again tonight, and boy, like, are you thinking that might happen? Then just look out here. This could happen. It could just develop into a real ugly storm in a hurry.
Yeah, and hey, there's been precedents for this before, too. You look at the Blackhawks in 08, 4 games into the season, fired Denny Savard. Joel Quenneville comes in. They make the conference finals that year, win the cup the next year. So
Yeah, the Blues with Hitchcock was pretty early when that happened, when they acquired him.
Yeah, and the Flyers fired Laviolette 1 year, three games into the season, and they had given him an extension the year prior to that. Points are at such a premium early on, you can't look at the October games as kind of throwaway ones, and that I think the leash, if there was one, is minuscule at this point.
And then you're also looking at, after the potential struggle tonight, then you get a little bit of a relax, or let's catch some traction here with Vancouver, Carolina, and then you get a double whammy of Columbus, Minnesota, and Pittsburgh times two. Like, your next six games against those three teams, right? That's that whole nine games, 9 of 11 against playoff teams. That's what follows after Thursday, Saturday this week. So got to catch traction in a hurry.
Thanks for the call, Carl. Ron, you'll wrap us up today on the Big Show, 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Go ahead, Ron.
Okay, I'll try and be quick. I agree with the I would try Pullman out, take Buff out, let him sit up there, show him, you know, this is, you know, this can't carry on. I don't know what to say. I get all kinds of things on social media that I'm looking, and it's, you know, it's so damn depressing to be a sports fan in this city right now. And you just hear about it every day, and it's really starting to wear on myself, and I believe a lot of people out there, and we're hearing it. But aside from that, I'd like to ask Troy about the Matt Nichols situation. And what we saw from Dominic Davis on what night was that, guys? Sorry, Saturday night.
Saturday, yeah.
Yeah.
Friday. Sorry, yeah.
Friday, yeah. If we have to go forward with Dominic Davis, I'm not really sure about that. I would go with Dan Lefevre, but with that finger and it's on the throwing hand, and he's got to put pressure on that ball when he goes to throw a ball. There's going to be the velocity on that ball is going to be tremendously less if he plays. I'm not sure, because that looked pretty significant with that fingernail. When you're putting a lot of pressure on that, that's a lot of pain, and it takes away from your throwing motion and everything. I just want to know what your comment on that. What do you think is going to? I know we haven't heard anything yet, but when you saw it,
okay, Ron, we got to let him answer because we're just out of time. Baseball, it'd be 6 to 8 weeks.
The thing, Ron, like, he was still throwing the ball real well at the end of the second quarter. There wasn't any zip coming off, and pain for that is superficial, right? Like, if you just get your nail ripped off, it's just all about that pain, and they got plenty of things that can come into role to control pain. What I'm concerned of, they haven't come out to announce what the injury, if, you know, that's of concern to me. And that he didn't go into the second means to me, for the second half, means that they were concerned that something he had was going to get worse, or they wanted to take x-rays to make sure nothing was broken. So I'm concerned about the whole Matt Nichols thing.
Speaking of the Bombers, we have two tickets to the Bombers and the Lions Saturday, October 14th, this Saturday at IGF, 780-1290. We also have a pair of tickets to the Manitoba Moose home opener this Friday versus the Cleveland Monsters at Bell MTS Play. 12th, 13th caller through. Get those, 780-1290. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Ricky, and myself, will be back tomorrow morning to break down an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Oilers tonight at 8 on TSN 1290. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a great Thanksgiving. We're back tomorrow morning at 6 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.